deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
As the clock strikes 13, it's the 18th of April, year of our Lord, 2025, Good Friday. And today we're going to talk about how we have lost our vision in this country, our vision for family, and even our vision for Christ. We have Elon Musk and some emails that have surfaced from one of his harem, I guess we could say, talking about how he wants to create an army of people who are super intelligent, as he imagines he is. Perhaps he is. Who knows? But it is that kind of pride that we see in the technocracy, but also a concern for posterity. And I guess the question is, what has happened in our society outside of these technocrats? Why isn't the Christian community leading this? And why isn't the Christian community pushing back against the murder, the mass murder of innocent children that is happening in Gaza? So we're going to take a look at all of these things today, and we have some major news about artificial intelligence as well. Major fraudulent news. We'll be right back. Well, it began with the shooting at FSU, Florida State University. The individual appears to be, according to the latest news that I saw, they believe in terms of motive that he was looking for a specific person that he wanted to get, but he wound up killing two people, another six in hospital. I'm not sure if that number includes him because he was also shot. 20 years old, Phoenix Ickner, and he is named as the mass shooter. His mother is a sheriff's deputy. And it was her gun, not her service weapon, but one that had been her service weapon she was allowed to purchase. Social media post that he wrote before this happened said, "You are my war club, my weapons for battle. With you, I shatter nations. With you, I destroy kingdoms." Speaking for God, I guess, you know. it's kind of how people take things out of context. It's pretty amazing. You know, you just pick up the Bible and take a verse and you point at it and say, that's what God wants me to do right there, right? So the guy gets the verse that says, Judas went out and hung himself. Go thou and do likewise or whatever, right? So, you know, when you take this kind of stuff out of context, I don't know what the guy's issue is. This is from the book of Jeremiah, talking about judgment day. But it's God who judges. That's the thing that he's missing here. And that's what we celebrate on Good Friday. The fact that God took out his judgment on his own son, on our behalf. Anyway, he said he was described as a political science major. So he had done other posts showing that he supported Trump. He says, "I think it's a little bit too late. Trump is already going to be inaugurated on January the 20th. There's not really much you can do unless you outright revolt. I don't think anyone wants that." So at that point in time, he didn't want violence, evidently. Leon County Sheriff McNeil said in a press conference Thursday, the gunman was a member of the department's youth setup and was involved in training programs. Again, two people killed, six hospitalized. He is also in custody in the hospital, so I don't know if he's a seventh one, but I think they were talking about the people that he shot and killed. Students, meanwhile, shared a lot of photos as they were hiding. They were taking pictures with their cell phone, which is what everybody does now. You know, whenever something happens, people don't do anything. They just watch and record. A nation of voyeurs. But, of course, nobody is allowed to do anything on the Florida campuses because, according to Florida law, state law, you cannot have a gun on campus, even if you are licensed to carry. So how'd this guy get a gun on campus? I just don't understand. I mean, it's against the law, right? How did that happen? I mean, they've got laws to stop that. Somehow, he got past the law. You know, we also have laws against murder. But really what that law is about, that's a law against self-defense. There weren't any professors. There weren't any students who had gone through license carry and been vetted even by the government. No, that's not even good enough. You're not allowed to protect yourself. So that's a school that's got 40 or 45,000 students. It's huge. And that means that you've got 44,999 students without a gun and one with. And he can do whatever he wants. And what he wanted to do that day was to kill two people. And he, in the process, got six other people wounded, I think. So when we look at this, and this is everywhere. And it is a tragedy. But, of course, they have an agenda. They want to take away more places where you can carry a gun and protect yourself. But what they're not talking about is the mass murder that is happening to children in Gaza. Because, you know, two deaths are a tragedy, but millions of deaths are a statistic, said Stalin. Thousands of Gaza children are malnourished under Israel's food blockade. They're starving them to death, those that they didn't kill with bombs. Israel's blockade has barred entry of all food and other goods for more than 6 weeks. Thousands of children have become malnourished, and most people are barely eating one meal a day as the stocks are dwindling, says the UN. No food, no fuel, no medicine, or any other supplies have entered Gaza since Israel imposed its blockade on March the 2nd. It renewed its bombardment on March the 18th, breaking a ceasefire. There we go. So they've set up a siege. They're starving people to death. There was a ceasefire. They broke the ceasefire. What's going on with this here? Why is it that our media is not talking about it? Why is it that anybody who criticizes this, they want to call you a terrorist and deport you? So hundreds have been killed. More than 400,000 Palestinians have been forced to flee their shelters in the latest of multiple displacements. A strike in the southern city killed a family of 10, including 5 children, 4 women, and a man. Strikes in northern Gaza killed 2 other couples with 9 children, according to the Indonesian hospital that is speaking there. A later strike hit a school sheltering displaced people, killing 3 people and a child. On Palm Sunday, Israel bombed the only Christian hospital in the area. So think about that. In March, more than 3,600 children were newly admitted for treatment for acute malnutrition, up from 2,000 the month before. Oh, hey, seems to be working. Great. We'll have the land any time now, because that's all that matters. We'll have the land. I don't care who I've got to kill. And we've got Christian pastors calling them Amalekites, saying, well, you can kill any or all of them. They're not Amalekites. And there is no Christian genocide that is supported by Christ. You shouldn't support these pastors. Humanitarians have been forced to watch people suffer and die while carrying the impossible burden of providing relief with depleted supplies, all while facing the same life-threatening conditions themselves, said an emergency coordinator for Doctors Without Borders. And continuing with the statement, she said, this is not a humanitarian failure. It is a political choice, a deliberate assault on people's ability to survive, carried out with impunity. As a matter of fact, such impunity that the Israeli defense minister says no humanitarian aid will enter Gaza ever. That's what he's saying, indefinite. Israel Katz is his name. He said plans for ethnic cleansing, which he calls voluntary relocation, are advancing. This is from anti-war. Voluntary relocation. We bomb you, we starve you, or, you know, this is to voluntarily get you to voluntarily relocate. I love that, don't you? You know, it's like when they were killing people with a vaccine, Biden said with his mandates, he said, well, you know, we're not forcing anybody to get the vaccine. You can lose your job, your position, all the rest of it, you know, or you can take the vaccine. Well, you know, if you don't go somewhere, get out of this area, we will kill you all. So maybe you ought to voluntarily relocate. Israel Katz said Israel's policy is clear. No humanitarian aid will be allowed into Gaza, And preventing humanitarian aid to Gaza is one of the central pressure tools that they're going to use to stop Hamas. Well, apparently they're not doing too well. They only got 25% of the tunnels, according to Israel, after a couple of years of bombing and all the rest of this stuff. Maybe they should ask Netanyahu to stop paying Hamas, to stop aiding them. He was the one who put them in. He was the one who aided them. This is why there's such a fight within Israel that the American press does not want to cover, because they call it Cuttergate. He was aiding Hamas. He deliberately put Hamas in. He wanted to have the most radical government in there that he wanted. People in Gaza don't want them. Netanyahu did. And he gave them money and their leaders money. And at the very beginning of this, I said, well, you got the leaders of Hamas living the high life and luxury high rises in Qatar. Why don't you go take them out? Instead, they would rather kill the civilians who are there, because they don't care about the terrorism. They don't care about murder. They simply want the land. That's the cold calculation here. No one, he said, is going to allow any humanitarian aid into Gaza, and no preparations are being made to allow any kind of aid of this kind, said Katz. He also said IDF troops would not leave the territory that they've captured since Israel restarted the genocidal war on March the 18th, says anti-war. So to date, hundreds of thousands of residents have been evacuated. Dozens of percent of the territory have been incorporated into the security zones. So it's a success. They don't care how many people they kill. Get some more land. So the plan for voluntary relocation of Gaza residents is being advanced, he said. How cynical. Katz said that if Hamas continues to refuse to release the hostages under Israel's terms, which now includes a demand for the group to disarm, then operations in Gaza will expand and will move to the next stage. Well, you know, Caitlin Johnston, an Australian writer, this is an article of hers that was picked up on Free Thought Project, and this is what I've been saying all along. She says it is crazy and evil to support Israel's atrocities because you think God wants you to. What religion is that? You see, even the unbelievers and the pagans look at this and shake their heads like, what's the matter with you people? And Jesus said, my kingdom is not of this world. You know, he was brought in on Palm Sunday. He was hailed as the conquering Messiah because they wanted somebody who was going to give them the land. They wanted somebody who was going to kick out the Romans. They wanted somebody who was going to create a worldly empire. And he kept telling them, my kingdom is not of this world. And yet we have Christians who don't care what Jesus said. Well, here's my understanding of some Old Testament kingdom prophecies. And I don't really care what Jesus said. You know, he doesn't know what he's doing, right? And the apostles, they don't know what they're doing. They very clearly stated, didactically, and these Old Testament prophecies were there, describing things in terms that people would understand. Much of what is in the Old Testament, it isn't just figurative. Yes, it literally happened, but the deliverance of Israel with Passover and all the rest of that stuff was clearly, that was both factual, which people like Ben Shapiro and Netanyahu do not believe. But all of that literally happened, but it was a picture of Christ's work. And it was not to give them an earthly kingdom. And it's not to give them an earthly kingdom today. If God wants to do that, he can do that. But you don't have a warrant to cheer starvation and murder of civilians, men, women, and children. How unchrist-like can you get? And we have even the pagans seeing this. And I've said this before. When you look at Paul's letter to the Corinthians, he says, you're engaged in sexual activity, and you're condoning, not all of them, but you know that somebody within their midst, he said, you are condoning what this man is doing, and even the pagans are astounded at it. Not even the pagans do that. We are condoning what the political government there is doing in Israel. And not even the pagans would condone that. She said, the U.S. is so spiritually bankrupt that literally tens of millions of Americans who support Israel's genocidal atrocities in Gaza because they think that God wants them to. She said, how gross is that? There is a massive politically engaged demographic in the United States whose idea of an actualized spirituality is demanding that their government keep giving weapons to an apartheid state, which is currently raining military explosives onto a giant concentration camp full of children. Well, again, I've used the examples of Abraham, who was given a promise from God. He didn't like the way that God was going to do it or God's timing, and so he decided he would take it into his own hands. And the result was something that we still live with today. And so even the people who don't understand what is going on, look at this. And folks, it is a reproach to Christ, and it is a cultic religion that replaces Christ with a political entity. It replaces what he came to do, which is to save his people, to create a kingdom that you can't see. You're not going to say it's there, it's within you. And they don't care about that. I'm not primarily talking about Jews here, she says. There are an estimated 30 million Christian Zionists in the United States, which is about twice the total population of Jews in the entire world, Zionist and non-Zionist. So what she's saying here is the biggest problem is the Christians who are Zionists. It is a religious cult that has denied Christ, denied his mission, replaced him with their worldly ambitions, because they think they've got a prophecy here, and they're going to make it happen. Well, you don't have to make God's prophecies happen. He makes them happen himself. She said, that's just members of Christian churches that are explicitly Zionist as a whole. There are also other Americans who support Israel for religious reasons as individuals. They believe its existence will help fulfill a biblical prophecy and will bring about a second coming of Jesus who will take them all to heaven and send all the unbelievers, including the Jews, to hell. Well, you know, that's fairly accurate for an unbeliever. There's a lot more involved there, but nevertheless, this is why it's such a reproach to Christ. Together, Christians and Jewish Zionists in the U.S. comprise an extremely powerful voting bloc who aggressively push Washington to support Israel and its various mass atrocities throughout the years, continuing with what we're seeing in Gaza today, because their religion tells them it's what God wants. No, that is not our religion. And we as Christians need to stand up and oppose this. Just the same as if we would oppose the Ku Klux Klan carrying crosses and burning them on people's yard. That is not Christian. You can't have that. And these Zionist Christians need to make a choice. Are they Zionist or Christians? Choose who you will serve. Will you serve Israel or Christ? Not even the most notorious cult leader, she said. Modern times have convinced people that it's good and fine to murder tens of thousands of children. Jim Jones himself, she said. But she said, get some weird-looking evangelical thumping a Bible in front of a podium, and suddenly people are praying that God guide American missiles onto every hospital in Gaza. If your religion tells you to help murder thousands of children in a genocidal onslaught, you need to change your religious beliefs. And you don't have Christianity. You're not a follower of the way. You're not a follower of Christ if that's what you're going to do. You know, when we look at this, we've had, for Easter, right, their Easter dinner, which is what they call it, Ken Copeland is going to be at Trump's Easter dinner. You know, Trump really loves this guy. If you look at, and good reason, you go back to the 2020 election, and what was Ken Copeland telling everybody? He was demonically laughing in front of the congregation and could not stop saying, they're telling us that Biden is president.
The media said what? The media said Joe Biden's president. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, and it goes on and on. I can't take too much of this guy. That church, it's all about politics. It's all it's about. Their God is politics. Their God is land. Their God is Trump. And their pastor is demonic. I'll spare you the clips. You can find them all over social media. I mean, if you want to see evidence of demonic possession, take a look at Ken Copeland. He's 88 years old. He predicted in December the date of his own death. I wonder if it's going to be as accurate as his political predictions. And he is saying that, he says, I've made a covenant and entered a covenant with God. And on December the 6th, 2056, I'll see y'all later. I'm out of here. I'll be 120 years old then. So he's got a deal with God. Maybe he should check the individual that he signed that agreement with. Did you make a deal with God or the devil? I don't know what you made an agreement with, but, yeah, he's also a big Zionist as well. As a matter of fact, he was confronted, you might remember this, Inside Edition, there was a reporter who confronted him about his luxury plane that he'd spent millions and millions of dollars on. All of these TV pastors, just fleecing the sheep. Just amazing. And this reporter engaged him because her father's a pastor. And she could smell a wolf among the sheep. And it doesn't take much to discern that about this guy, about Copeland. And so she confronts him about buying a big, expensive private jet, a really big one, like Trump's.
And I prayed about it, and I thought, I'm not missing that dedication in Jerusalem. Without the airplane that we have that I bought from Tyler Perry, and I didn't pay anywhere. And Tyler's one of the greatest guys. He made that airplane so cheap for me, I couldn't help but buy it.
Well, my question then, okay, all right, but I want to get to the
deal.
People are very concerned about that comment.
Give me a chance here, Inside Edition. Okay. I love your eyes. And here's what happened. We flew in 21 days, 70 hours, 40,000 miles, touched five continents, and preached face to face personally with 125,000 people.
Do you ever?
That's scary.
Do you ever use your private jets to go visit your vacation homes, for example?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Again, getting back to the comment, you said that you don't like to fly commercial because you don't want to get into a tube with a bunch of demons. Do you really believe that human beings are demons?
No, I do not. And don't you ever say I did. We wrestle not with flesh and blood, but principalities and powers.
Can you explain?
I think he lost the wrestling match. I think he is firmly in the grip of those principalities and powers, don't you? And he said there will never be a two-state solution because a two-state solution is no solution at all because you can't argue with the king of the universe. Don't even try. Huh? Don't you even try. Well, when you look at these guys, I mentioned John Hagee, and I played that clip and had people send me articles about that saying, well, you know, he's walked that back. The fact that he said that Jesus was not the Messiah. And he never said that he was the Messiah. And I said, well, that's a flat-out lie. And as a matter of fact, this is an interesting article from CARM.org. And the guy pointed out the reach of Hagee. It truly is amazing. When you give yourself over to the devil, you know, he's got all these things. He can show you the kingdoms of the world, right? Those are all his to give. He can give you 160 TV stations. He can give you 50 radio stations. He can help you to publish 10 books. He can get you a crowd of 14,000 people once a week. And so this guy, Matt Slick, who wrote this, he said, well, his beliefs page is not very precise, but it seems to be within orthodoxy. The problem, however, is with his new book, In Defense of Israel, where Hagee apparently states that Jesus was not the Messiah. And he said, you know, you can find it on YouTube. It's a clip that I played for you. Jesus, he said, did not come to earth to be the Messiah. And since Jesus refused by word and deed to claim to be the Messiah, how can the Jews be blamed for rejecting what was never offered? He said, obviously, this is a big problem, though, right? And so the question is this guy ignorant, heretical, Or is he doing this to sell books and sell controversy? I mean, I've seen Alex do this kind of stuff. Something he clearly knows is false. And he throws it out there, and then he tries to spin it and walk it back. Well, I didn't really say that, you know, but it was the controversial thing that he throws out there. So the guy says, well, instead of making my judgment on a one-minute soundbite, well, I think we can make our judgment on that one-minute soundbite. It was pretty clear. Pretty clear. And if we understand what Zionism is about, it's super clear what he's talking about. He says, didn't want to make my judgment on a one-minute soundbite. He said, so I got the book and I went through it and I didn't read the whole thing. Instead, I went to the section, chapter 10, which he did he expanded chapter 10 because of the controversy and sold it again. Where he deals with Jesus as a Messiah. In short, Hagee takes several pages to characterize the Jewish idea of the Messiah as being a political deliverer who was supposed to free Israel from Roman oppression. Sound familiar? You know, when we talk about this week and the Christian celebration of what happened, the remembrance of what happened, you know, he was welcomed on Palm Sunday as king. And welcomed as Messiah. But they were looking for a political leader. And once he was taken into custody, once he was beaten severely, beaten and bloodied and pulled before the people, they saw, well, this isn't going to be the guy who's going to give us a political deliverance. And Pilate says, who do you want, Barabbas or this man? And it comes out and says, behold the man, right? And they saw this beaten, wounded, physically abused and crushed individual. Oh, we don't want him. We'd rather have a murderer. Releases Barabbas. And that's it shows the true heart of what they wanted. Again, it's what the Zionists want today, whether they're Christians or Jews. That's what they want. They want political deliverance. But the Bible is very clear. Actually, so is Hagee. Throughout his book, he called Moses the Messiah of Israel. And he capitalizes that word. He's not just talking about it in the sense Messiah means anointed. And it's the English version of a Hebrew word that means anointed. Christ means the same thing. It's an English version of a Greek word that means the same thing. But he calls Moses the Messiah with a capital M, not just a generally anointed leader. And then he says that Jesus refused to be their Messiah, choosing instead to be the Savior of the world. Well, that was the role of the Messiah. And they misunderstood the Old Testament kingdom prophecies, just like the people of today. And so he is defining Messiah simply as a political deliverer, which is what you would expect a Zionist to do, because that's all they care about. And he said, well, he's correct in that aspect, that Jesus didn't come to be a political Messiah. But Hagee has failed to define his terms adequately, and he's caused an uproar. You see, you don't get to redefine the terms that are there. The Bible defines what these terms are. And he's trying to redefine it. So he says, so why is he doing this? He says the same thing I said. You know, is he doing this because he doesn't know, or is he doing this because he wants to invite controversy? But he says, Jesus refused by word and deed to claim to be the Messiah. And that is clearly a false statement. The English word Messiah is used twice in the New Testament, in John both times. In John 1, very beginning, people said, as they saw Jesus, they went around and talked to other people, said, we found the Messiah. And then it says in parentheses, which translated means Christ. And then when he's talking to the woman at the well, the woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming, he who is called Christ. And when that one comes, he will declare all things to us. And Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. He frequently, though, called himself Son of Man, but that was also a claim to be the Messiah. Son of Man was a prophetic term out of the Old Testament. It wasn't talking about his human nature. When he said to the Pharisees that were interrogating him on that week before they crucified him, when he said, called himself the Son of Man, they were outraged because they understood that was referring to the Messiah. But throughout the New Testament, it's very clear. So when Simon Peter, he says, "Who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter says, "You are Christ, the Son of the living God." And Mark, the high priest, was questioning him. He said, "Are you Christ, the Son of the Blessed One?" He says, "I am. And you shall see the Son of Man," there we go again, "sitting at the right hand of power and coming with the clouds of heaven." And in John 17, as Jesus is praying for those as followers, as disciples, then and now, he said, "This is eternal life, that they may know you, the only true God, and Jesus Christ, whom you have sent." Folks, that's not his last name. That is his title. Why would Hagee fail to mention these verses? Again, why would he? For political purposes. To make money. He said, Hagee has such a huge agenda regarding his support for Israel that he has apparently allowed himself to do shoddy, incomplete research regarding the topic of the Messiah so as to support a particular view of Israel. That's exactly right. And these people, as I thought about this week, as I look at the damage that's been done to the cause of Christ, people like Paula White don't tell the Jews the gospel. That's not important for them, you know, that type of thing. Well, and obviously, you know, you don't think the gospel is as important as your physical kingdom that you want. Isn't it amazing how the Zionists have basically become the Pharisees of Jesus' day? They really have. They are not in any way, shape, or form Christian. And what bothers me is that we see people like Caitlin Johnstone, we see people like Gerald Celente, who think that that is what Christianity is. And we have to oppose that. So he finishes up by saying, he says, "I think his ultra support of Israel has clouded his judgment." No, it's become his God. It really has. We have, as a matter of fact, like I said, she said there's more Christian Zionists than there are Jews in the world, Zionist and non-Zionist. And we have a lot of non-Zionist Jews that are speaking out. They've taken out full-page ads in the New York Times. They're the only ones, evidently, that are allowed to, right? Anybody else does it, you're labeled anti-Semitic by the Zionists. 10 leading U.S. Jewish groups denounced the Trump administration's campus crackdown. And so these are representatives from Reform, from Conservative, from Reconstructionist movements. You know, the ultra-Orthodox Jews don't even support the existence of Israel. They said, well, yeah, God has promised the land to us, but he's going to give it to us miraculously. And if you go out there and try to do it yourself, we don't support that. 10 U.S. Jewish groups, including representatives from these different Reform, Constructive, Reconstructionist movements, denounced the Trump administration's crackdown on non-citizen activists in universities. Yeah, we have something called the First Amendment. Legally, he's not allowed to do that. But, all these people are saying, not in our name. Not in our name. And I got to say, of these people like Hagee, of Paula White, of these people who are the spiritual advisors to Donald Trump, taking him straight to hell, not in my name. And not in the name of Christ will I let you say this kind of stuff without opposing you. We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back, and I've got some comments here. We'll go over your comments.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back, and I've got a lot of comments here. Kick, a Syrian girl said these, quote, Christian, unquote, pastors who support Israel's atrocities should read their Bibles. Israel has always had its share of evil rulers, and God has punished the people severely for following them. Yeah, I agree. Rumble, KWD68, I've watched and read David Stockman's thoughts on tariffs, etc. I'd love to see you have him back on. Yeah, I'd like to get him back on. We should get him back. He's solid. And he was somebody who took all the slings and arrows back there at the time of Reagan about what he believed. You got to respect that, you know, somebody, whether they're right or wrong, you got to respect somebody standing on their principles that they believe in explaining them to people. On Rumble, Sprumford, thank you very much for the tip. I appreciate that. So my fiance was a rabid Christian Zionist when we first met. I gently introduced the truth about Israel to her. Thankfully, she's no longer a Zionist. Well, good. And, you know, and that's the thing, is that it's really a blessing to redirect your focus away from the world and from politics to the Lord Jesus Christ. And that's the bad thing about this, that this heresy is exploding. And it explodes because, yes, our tendency is to be focused on the world and in the wrong way. You know, it takes people out of the fight, the spiritual fight. It takes us out of the fight opposing evil, because how can you credibly oppose evil when you cheer for the murder of children? And when you get so sectarian and racist about all this stuff, because that is where the racism is, you know. On Rumble, Guard, good to see you, Guard. Liberty Conspiracy, find him every evening on Twitter, and I'm not sure what platform you're on besides Twitter right now, so you can let us know. He says, I'm curious to hear more of David's thoughts about Judas sometime, just to contemplate more on Good Friday and Easter. I'll give you my thoughts on The Chosen, because they did this. I haven't watched it. We started watching the first season, and I was like, as I said before, you know, it can be a good thing for some people who have never been exposed to it if they get the right stuff, but you never know how they are spinning you. And I thought about it at a very early age. I watched The Ten Commandments, and that's a great movie. Very well-made movie. Of course, Cecil B. DeMille made it as a silent film as well as, you know, redoing it with Charlton Heston. But that fixed in my mind, you know, every time I think of Moses, I see Charlton Heston. I don't like that, right? There's a reason that God did not wait to have Christ come to earth when he didn't wait until we had TV and radio and film, right? Because he didn't want you to focus on the outside. You know, humans look at the outside. God looks at the inside. And when you look at the Bible, it's very rare that it'll mention something about the physical characteristics of somebody. I don't think there's any physical characteristics mentioned about Jesus or any of the disciples or apostles, anything like that. You have a description of Saul, King Saul, talking about how tall he was. You know, David is described as good looking and ruddy or red or whatever. I don't know if he had red hair or not. I mean, there was a mixture of a lot of people that got mixed into his family line. He could have had red hair. I don't know. But yeah, they don't really go into any detail like that, because God is focused on the interior. You know, when people write books, what do? A good writer will go through all kinds of detail, describing everything in all around, you know, to create a picture, a visual picture of everything. Describe the environment that's there, the homes that they're in, what they're driving, what they're wearing, all the rest of the stuff, what they look like, and all of that. Names for everybody and all the rest of this. God is really more interested in his interaction with people. And so, you know, that's part of what I don't like about these things. You know, if The Chosen gets people to read the Bible, great. And then we'll see how much they've changed it. But just don't go with those preconceptions that are there. As I always say, I've read the book and the book was better. I always heard that when people would make a movie out of a book. Yes, it definitely is better. The Lord of the Rings is better than even the movie. And I thought the first series of the first trilogy was pretty good. But the book is much better. And the Bible is way better and much better than what they did with The Chosen. The reason I mention that is because Guard talked about Judas. They put in a whole backstory of Judas, and they made Matthew autistic and all the rest of this stuff. And it's like, what really turned me off about it, I saw the trailer for season 2, and they had Mary sitting with another woman, and they're kind of writing Jesus' speech, the Sermon on the Mount, as a speech. It's like, wow. How far can you get away from all that stuff? But you need to go back to the Ten Commandments. Even the extent that everybody still shows a burning bush, right? But if you read the text, there was a man standing in it. Why is that never shown? And what is that about? You know, there's a man standing there with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace as well, wasn't it? One like unto the Son of Man, you know. What is that about? So we get, you know, we miss a lot when we take that kind of approach to it, when we go for the visceral and we go for movies. Read the book. Read the book. I don't plead with the case of celebrity converts. We never know what their situation is. But how many times have you heard people come back and say, well, I've been around, you know, Christians in church and my family and all this, but it wasn't until just now when they're 50 or 60 years old, they decide I'd read the Bible, and they can't believe it. It's truly amazing when they read it. And it is truly an amazing book. And it's even more amazing when you match it up with the prophecies that are there, that we can see having been fulfilled in Christ already. Rumble, Dougalug, thank you for the tip. He says, thank you, David. You're way better at bringing God's word than Ken Copeland. There's some gas for the tank. Well, thank you. That's faint praise, but thank you. I don't know that Ken does that at all. on Rumble, DGA, thank you for the tip. He said, David Hagee takes money from Israel. He's fine with the gospel being banned in Israel. He also states no reason to tell Jews about Jesus, just like Paul White, I guess. Yeah. He says, they'll all get a second chance and accept Jesus, and it's fraud. Yeah, that's one of the biggest things, right? No, your chance right now, folks, is now. Now. Carpe diem. Seize the day. This is your chance. Christ is going to come back like a thief in the night. There are no second chances. You might die today in a car accident. There's no second chances. Don't waste that time. Rumble. Do not obey. Thank you for the tip. He says, thou shalt not kill. Exodus 20. Yeah. They pick and choose what they want. Okay, Guard's Liberty Conspiracy is also on Rumble. So Rumble and Twitter. Mel Gibson responded to a guest that Tucker Carlson had on, former Congressman Kurt Weldon. He talked about a lot of different things. He talked about how the CIA would kill people with rapid cancer, and it's like, what do you think about that jab? Yeah, I know it came from the CIA and the intelligence communities and that type of thing as well. But, you know, what about the turbo cancer? Does that count? I know. They give people, you know, they have a lot of different ways to assassinate people, make it look the other way. But what about the mass murder of the jab that we know about? You want to talk about that? Anyway, he went on with Tucker Carlson, and he was talking about, one of the things he talked about was 9/11. Well, Mel Gibson shared a clip where they were talking about it, and then commented, Mel Gibson did, he said, three buildings collapsed as if they were programmed to do so. Not two, but three. To this day, nobody has explained how Building 7 fell, even though no plane hit it. He said the towers were designed to withstand airplane impacts. That's right. They were designed to withstand a contemporary commercial Boeing, you know, 757 or whatever, hitting it when they made it. That was part of the building code, and it wasn't a theory because the Empire State Building had been, back in the day, hit by a plane. So they said, well, that could happen again, and you're going to have to design this to withstand an impact from a contemporary airliner. So Mel Gibson says, so what really happened that day? And why is no one allowed to talk about it? Because, you know, Tucker Carlson said he wasn't allowed to talk about it. And he didn't talk about it. As a matter of fact, Tucker Carlson wouldn't let people, when he had people on his show, he wouldn't let them show the pictures that they had. Take a look at how these buildings are just falling in free fall, that type of thing. I had somebody who'd sent me a song, and I've it's on a computer that I can't, still haven't been able to get data off of for a while, and some disk drives that I've lost the cabling. You know, that's the really grinding thing about this. You've got a lot of data. I've got a lot of footage that I shot at Colonial Williamsburg. That was really good footage that I shot. And on this film footage that I shot at 24 frames. It's like, I like the 24 frames. It looks cinematic. And so it was some of the early early cameras that started, you know, single lens reflex cameras that were doing video. The Nikon D90, I think, was what we had. And anyway, I've got a lot of great footage that I'd love to use as B-roll here, but I can't get it on the data. I can't get the disc because I don't have the cabling. These are old discs. I can't find that. It's not the cabling, but it's the power cord for that particular group of discs. Anyway, I got off on this tangent. He says, enough with the fear. It's time for the truth about 9/11, about history, about all of us. Oh, I was going to talk about the music that I couldn't get to. Guy sent us a thing, and he had, I use it on the old show, but I don't have access to that music now because of the disc. That's why I got onto that. And what it was, he just kept repeating, three buildings, two planes, three buildings, two planes, three buildings, two planes. But it was a good song. You know, it wasn't repetitive. It wasn't a rap song. It was a good song. And, but that was the emphasis. Three buildings, two planes. Do the math, right? But here's the situation, right? We have, he says, why? It's time for the truth. And, you know, we need to have the truth about 9/11. Well, you think you're going to get it from Trump? Rudy Giuliani was part of the cover-up, a big part of the cover-up. You got Howard Lutnick, who knew not to go to work that day, right? these are Trump's closest friends and advisors. And so, you know, he says, oh, we got to have people who are people of integrity. So Kurt Weldon said, Trump needs to appoint people of impeccable integrity to a commission that would study the facts. Yeah, maybe he could get Rudy and Lutnick to do that. Maybe he could get Gina Haspel, that person of integrity, who tortured people, covered up the torture, and then used the lies from that torture to lie us into the war with Iraq. People of integrity, impeccable integrity and character. I don't see them around Trump, do you? I don't see anybody like that around Trump. Weldon dismissed the idea of a conspiracy theorist. He said, you know, what gets me is reporters who call people conspiracy theorists. Well, that's all the CIA does. They're the ones who create the conspiracies. He says, as a matter of fact, they have whole courses for their agents on how to make people look like they are conspiracy theorists. Yeah. What was it? Pompeo was there, he said, I went to West Point. They told us we don't steal, cheat, or tolerate people do. He said, then I went to the CIA, and they had classes on all those things. You know, they also had classes on coups and all the rest of this as well. Thomas Massey talked a little bit. You want to talk about people of integrity. You're not going to find too many of them in Congress. If they're in Congress, they will be marginalized, pushed to the side, or pushed out. Thomas Massey gave an example of why Congress does nothing and why it is so corrupt.
Like a lobbyist can't buy me food. But I can go to lunch, pick up the tab, and the lobbyist can write me a $5,000 check to my campaign, and then my campaign can pay for the food. Yeah. So they've created this rule to say that lobbyists can't buy you food, but what good does it do when the lobbyist can give you the money and you buy the food?
And that's common practice?
Yeah. Like, it's a campaign expense at that point. Don't shoot the messenger. And that's just, I mean, that's the way it works. I'm giving you an example of a rule that doesn't really work. Like, you can put rules in place. What are some other things? The lobbyists, when they give you money, ostensibly they're not giving you their money. They're not even giving you their corporation's money. They are giving you money from employees of that corporation who have pooled their money into like a club or a group, and they've been persuaded maybe by their management that they should give a little back to this because their job would be more secure if they supported their lobbying efforts in DC. So the employee, you're actually ostensibly, it's money from employees of that company that's being channeled to the lobbyists that's then given to you and the lobbyists are supposedly representing the employees' interests. That's the workaround they have to keep corporations from giving members of Congress money directly. So fair enough, people argue for their case, whether it's a charity, whether it's even, frankly, a country. But where is there's a place where I think I would intervene and say...
Please intervene.
Yeah. The question is, does a foreign country have the right to be represented in my office? And I don't think they necessarily do. And so I run afoul. I haven't banned lobbyists, but I don't accept meetings when people come to lobby for foreign countries.
Yeah. That's all sit right there. And he's also introduced bills to say, well, if you are a citizen of another country, you shouldn't be in the government. That would be people like Oz from Turkey and Rashida Tlaib from Palestine. That's what she's all about, waving the Palestinian flag when she wins. And, of course, the people like the congressman, I don't even remember his name, who wore his Israeli Defense Force uniform to Congress. Yeah, lots of them, lots of them. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the pronouncement from the White House Innovation Czar saying that the American government can manipulate time and space. Is this hyperbole or not? We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.
Well, let's talk about some thought crimes here. The U.S. can manipulate time and space. This is, it possesses technology to do that. To manipulate, to bend time and space, said White House Innovation Czar Michael Kratsios. He delivered the remarks at a forum in Austin. It's called the Endless Frontiers Retreat. Just weeks after being confirmed as director of the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, RT has the story here. Golden Age of America that Trump is talking about says the U.S. can emerge as a global leader by making smart choices regarding public funding and deregulating innovation. So, you know, our future, whether or not we're going to have a society that moves forward, is all going to be determined on the government. How un-American is that? How un-Christian is that, right? That's not what this country was founded on. That's not what made America great. Not at all. That's what made communists and countries fail. It's what made any authoritarian country fail. For everybody to passively follow the government. And boy, when you look at what happened in 2020, everybody just passively did what the government said. Churches shut down, schools shut down, stores shut down, everything shut down. Because the government says so. And they're going to fix it. We're going to wait until they've got a solution, and they're going to fix it. So let's wait for the government to lead us into a better world, right? No. No. Do it on our own. But listen to the technological hubris here and the pride. This is his quote. Our technologies permit us to manipulate time and space. They leave distance annihilated. They cause things to grow and to improve productivity. So is that hyperbole? Is it a metaphor to say, well, we can manipulate time and space? I mean, maybe what he's just saying is that, you know, we can travel in airplanes very quickly and get places and stuff like that, or we can use technology to communicate with people instantaneously over the internet. Maybe that's what he's saying. Or maybe he's saying something else, because later in the speech, he said we have to overcome the sclerosis of the state. We have to achieve scientific discoveries that will bend time and space, make more with less, and drive us further into the endless frontier. Well, I think, you know, whatever he means by that, you know, whether he's talking about some kind of, you know, super tech that is able to manipulate the time-space continuum, or if he's just talking about technological leadership, this is the same kind of technological pride, same kind of technological hubris that we've seen from Mark Andreessen, who said, technology can solve our problems, and if technology creates a problem, then more technology can solve that problem. Technology can do everything. Technology is their god. They take pride in it. You know, we call them technocrats. Sometimes we call them technobrats, because they act like children. But actually, they're technobabbles, technobabblers, right? They're like the people who built the Tower of Babel. They have that kind of arrogance, that kind of pride. And I think a good example of this is a this is a guy who does a lot of contract work for some pretty big companies and pretty big networks and things like that. He puts this out as if it was a trailer for something that is coming up, but he really did capture the essence of what these techno babblers, the techno Tower of Babel people, really believe they're going to be able to do. He calls it Engineer Earth, or we could say geoengineering. He says we have to become planetary engineers.
In the year to come, our planet will present us with challenges that have wiped out nearly all life in the past. But technology gives us powers that no other species has ever known. If we wield them properly, we could engineer a planet beyond our wildest dreams. One that even outlives its natural lifespan.
What new wonders will we build, it says. And we see gigantic cities in orbiting toroids. Our powers might surprise us. We can do anything. We are gods, right? Oh, this person with a thing around their head.
Is ours to build.
Engineering Earth. Boy, isn't that the spirit of the Tower of Babel? Isn't that the spirit of these technocrats in and around the White House? I think it really is. Yeah, the name of the guy that does that is MelodySheep.com. Melody Sheep. He's got does really good work, but that's a worldview that I do not support, obviously. One of pride and arrogance. Trump himself has recently alluded to advanced technologies that have not been revealed to the public. And we know that, right? I've always said it's a big mistake to underestimate the technology of these people. And it's a big mistake to overestimate their ethics and morality. Last week, he claimed China would hesitate to escalate trade tensions with the U.S. partly due to the existence of secret weapons in the American arsenal. He said, "We have weaponry," said Trump, "that nobody has any idea what it is. And it's the most powerful weapons in the world that we have. More powerful than anybody, even, not even close," he said. Well, you can look at this as just a bunch of, typical Trump boasting. But they do have technology that we have not seen. I think we saw the effects of it on 9/11, but that's another story. AI, says Russia, can replace half of Russia's civil servants, says the Minister for Digital Development. This is the same kind of stuff that Elon Musk is doing. All the governments of the world, they want a world government, and all of them want to replace bureaucrats with AI and robots. They want to replace their armies with AI and robots. Why is that? Well, yeah, because you never know if somebody's going to blow the whistle on them or somebody's going to throw a monkey wrench into their plans. They want to have fewer humans to do that. They want to have everything under their control. They want to have more control if they can have more centralization. This is really about minimizing government bureaucrats and maximizing governance through AI. So Russia, says this RT article, could, says the digital development minister, could potentially replace at least half of its civil servants with AI. He said, I believe AI can certainly replace half, possibly even more. Putin said the country should be, quote, a leader, not only in creation, but also in the scale of implementation, the introduction of artificial intelligence in every single sphere of our lives. To lie to people, to be the authority that can convince them, to spy on them, to see if they're believing it, and the rest of this, right? Government reports indicate that Russia employs over 3 million public servants across the governance, security, and social services. In other words, everything but the military, okay? They said that works out to 160 public servants for every 10,000 citizens. Well, you know, we have a tremendous bureaucracy as well. When I look at Russia, they have 3 million bureaucrats. The U.S. has 2.7 million bureaucrats for a population of 347. That works out to 128 bureaucrats for each person. That's more than Russia. 0.7%. And when you throw in all the bureaucrats at the state and local level, the number that I found for state and local employees is 19.6 million. So you add to that the 2.7 million federal employees that are not part of the military, comes up to 15.5 million. We got a, you know, 6.5% of our population works for the government. And they want to move them over to AI. Now, I've talked in the past about AI agents. What we've seen so far from AI is basically the chat programs that are going through and collating information and that you can query, not always trust because they hallucinate, that type of thing. But there's something else that is coming, which is an AI agent. It operates and can do tasks, and it operates much more at a much higher level. And you can give it some abstract tasks to do, and it can work out the individual steps to do it. And now we have several companies. This is an article from Cointelegraph. Your AI digital twin can take your meetings and can comfort your loved ones when you die, it says. And we got several companies that are working on that. If artificial intelligence could stand in for you, if it could take your meetings, if it could answer your emails, if it could even comfort your loved ones long after you're gone, would you let it? They said that's no longer a hypothetical question. A new class of startups is building digital twins using AI agents. AI replicas of real people that act, speak, and remember just like their human counterparts. And this story really kind of talks about two different aspects of this. One of them is basically cloning you and what you believe. In other words, training it to respond as you would respond, to see the world as you would see the world and that type of thing. The other one is talking about actually the AI agency, where you would have it do tasks for you and relieve you of all the mundane things that you do on a regular basis. So it said a new class of startups is starting digital twins, AI replicas of real people that act, speak, and remember just like their human counterparts. There is a serious attempt to capture human essence in machine form with real-world use cases and profound cultural implications. Well, to capture the human essence, what is that really? As we said, these post-humanists that are out there, these people who talk about singularity, how they're going to merge with machines, it's like how they're going to transfer their essence into some kind of a robot or something so that they can, quote, live forever. I said, well, you don't even know what you are if you think that. You can't transfer your spirit in there. You are more than a collection of memories or electrical impulses. Somebody can make a copy of you, and that's a big part of what they're talking about here, is making a copy of people. There is a company in South Korea that is called ReMemory, and they're pioneering the concept of allowing bereaved families to speak to a hyper-realistic AI version of their deceased loved one. And Deep Brain AI is the company behind the service. They called it a tool for healing. Critics have called it grotesque. Dan Thompson, founder and CEO of a company called Sensei, didn't set out to build a startup. He was actually writing a book. He said, I'd hit my head. I'd lost my memory. That experience struck me with the fear of disappearing. That's a weird way to look at it. Sensei creates AI replicas of individuals. Thompson calls them virtual humans or personas. Now this has become a thing, and they just refer to them as sonas, instead of personas. They've been trained using documents, videos, interviews, emails, and more. They don't just sound like you, they act on your behalf. He said, I've had people interact with my replica for hours on Telegram and not realize that it wasn't me. He said, it's 90 to 95% indistinguishable. So their sonas, their replicas, are embedded into apps, websites, devices, and they learn continuously. One interesting aspect is that the digital replica can continue to grow and evolve once the training is over. If a replica evolves after death, though, is it still you? You know, it's kind of interesting. It makes me, when I see this, it makes me think of the first Superman movie with Christopher Reeve. And, you know, they've got the baby is making the journey from Krypton to Earth. And as he's in there, his father, Marlon Brando, or at least a persona, a sona of him, right, is interacting and talking to the baby, answering questions, training the baby, and all the rest of this stuff. And that's basically what their idea is. It is to create a replica of you that would be able to interact, be interactive, but it would interact with people and by imitating you. Ben Gertzel is the chief AI advisor of a company called Twin Protocol. Now, Ben Gertzel is, as they call him, an AI luminary. He's somebody that everybody in the AI industry really likes. And when I interviewed Hugo de Garis multiple times, he said, you know, you really need to talk to my friend, Ben Gertzel. It's like, well, you know, Hugo was something of a skeptic about this stuff, right? He was the opposite of Ray Kurzweil, and he was skeptical that this may not all turn out too good, right? But Ben Gertzel was, but he was still, you know, pushing AI, still going to do it, and like all of his scientific friends, even though he thought he was creating a godlike superintelligence and that there was a good chance that it would kill us all, he still wanted to do it. Ben Gertzel was even more into that, so I never did interview Ben because I didn't want to push that. But, you know, it was Ben Gertzel was behind the company that made, and you've seen the picture, I've shown it as well in the past. It was some female robot that they had there in Saudi Arabia that was, it didn't really have all that impressive, and animatronics wasn't all that much different from a Disney thing or something, but it was interactive, and they gave it citizenship in Saudi Arabia. Mohammed bin Salman did, to show how trendy and progressive they are, that they've got a robot. They made the robot the first citizen of a country. Well, that was Ben Gertzel who was behind that, but he's also there with Twin Protocol. That company focuses on vaults, which are curated data sets of your books, your lectures, your videos, your voice memos. You know, you got about 6,000 hours of my stuff, you know. Usually create one of those things. An AI layer that captures your tone, your style, your diction, your intent, an interactive version of you that responds with your knowledge and in your voice. An AI twin isn't about perfect replication, they said. It's about purpose. It's about legacy conversations, professional coaching. Curation matters, they said. Your AI twin, however, when we talk about the agents, it might be your calendar assistant. It might be your family archivist, your lifelong productivity partner. It could become a tool of self-reflection, they said. Your twin can actually show you insights about yourself. It's like a mirror, but smarter. Well, mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the smartest of them all? Not you, dummy. You're asking me questions. I'm just AI. You start seeing patterns, though, in your own thinking if you do this, they said. And it also is set up to work with the Singularity Net ecosystem. So that's what I'm saying. These people are fully on board with transhumanism, posthumanism, cyborgs, and all the rest of this stuff. It is a very evil secular movement. Users maintain control over their vaults, over their replicas, right down to their ability to shut it all off. It's integrated within the blockchain to verify the source of all training data. In a world of deep fakes, provenance is power. Provenance, in other words, who created it, right? And you know, just, I haven't talked about it for a while, but Coalition for Content Provenance and Authentication, the CCPA. I refer to it as the Chinese Communist Party of America. But that's a coalition that's put together by hardware and software groups. You had ARM and the processors that are part of that was the hardware. Intel was a part of it. Microsoft, as well as Adobe on the software side. And then they team with government and media because they want to be able to put this on machines and stop you from creating written work, audio work, still picture memes, video, anything. If you are not an approved person, then they will have this Coalition for Content Provenance and Authentication. They're going to see who created it. And if you are not on their approved list of creators, you won't even be able to upload the stuff. That's how they stop things from going viral. That all fits into this stuff. Curated AI twins could serve as mentors, tutors, or interactive textbooks, bringing first-hand voices into classrooms or allowing students to ask questions to a digital version of a historical figure, you know, like Superman interacting with his Marlon Brando father there. We're building trusted extensions. Your twin should be able to do work for you without ever forgetting that it's yours. No, isn't that great? Also, makes me think of that comedy with Michael Keaton called Multiplicity, where he's able to go in and just clone physical copies of himself, and they come out the same age and maturity as he is instantaneously, right? They're helping him with work. It's basically an AI agent, so what these people are doing, except their agent is going to work in the virtual world. His were actually physical. And so it was great. It freed him up for all kinds of stuff. And then his clone decided that it needed help. And so it made a copy of itself. And, you know, just like if you got a photocopier, a copy of a copy isn't quite as sharp. And his copy that he cloned really wasn't very sharp. And that was where the comedy was coming in. Anyway, Harvard research suggests that a well-used personal assistant could recover up to 45% of a person's time, even if an AI twin gives you back 20%. That would be transformative, wouldn't it? What could you do with that time? Who could you spend with it? Again, you know, that's the question that was answered by that, that they had a lot of fun with in that movie, Multiplicity. This is not about replacement. It's about reflection. It's about agency. It's about amplification. Twin Protocol's self-serve product is aiming to cost as little as $25 to get started. I bet it goes up pretty quickly. The platform's roadmap includes everything from AI TV, where you have two twins having conversations with each other in real time. So you can have two clones of yourself talking to each other, I guess. Or to holographic twin deployments. It's also creating a token-based economy with a twin token that can allow users to earn revenue by licensing interactions with their twin. You know, it's kind of interesting, you know, when you look at this and you think about cloning and stuff. I don't, it'd be interesting to see that. I don't think, you know, they talk about twin TV and stuff. I don't think that'd be very interesting. I don't know. I mean, you know, if the way I do the program, I don't really know what I'm going to say before I come on the program. I mean, I've looked at some articles. I've got a general idea. But many times I'll just go off on another tangent, and I don't know if that's good or bad. I just try to be open to the spirits leading on things like that. I don't know where that comes into play with any of this stuff, right? It's all going to be scripted and programmed. It seems to me like somebody reading off a teleprompter. You want to have AI reading off of your teleprompters? Because all it's going to be able to do, it doesn't have a connection to God. It can't follow the leading of any of these things. Anyway, and it's got also no concern about telling you a lie. That's what you've seen over and over again from AI. The company is also developing clever ways to help everyday users. Imagine getting a text prompt each morning, just one question about your life. And over time, you're training your twin without even realizing it, they said. Well, that's really what they said boomers and millennials are looking for, but the younger generation is looking for some kind of a personality extension that is not a replica of themselves. And this is a company called Clony. They have a different take on this. Their avatars aren't meant to mirror humans in form or in tone. Indeed, they function as expressive agents of counterculture. And so it's kind of a surreal population. Our avatars are emotively charged. They're not trying to look like you. They're built to explore identity, not to replicate it. I'm not really sure what that means. That sounds like a bunch of doublespeak, but anyway, they said they're being used in brand campaigns now, though, in music videos. Influencers are using these things, doing it for digital storytelling. Each avatar has a unique voice, a visual aesthetic. Some interact with fans. Others represent values or products. Their goal is to create an autonomous society of digital beings that reflect the cultural realities of a new generation. So they're going to do this. They're going to use, very attractively drawn or created women and even men, to sell you products. And you're already seeing a lot of this on YouTube. People put up stuff and they'll use a different voice. They don't use their face. They have some kind of an AI character that is speaking. The most distinctive contribution is philosophical, a rejection of the idea that AI twins have to be human-like at all. We're not building nostalgia machines. We're building future identities. So they said it's kind of interesting to see the generational divide. Millennials and boomers are looking at realism. The Gen Z and Alpha, the people are leaning into what they call multiplicity with all of this. Digital twin movement. The philosophical questions. Who owns your likeness? Who gets to train it? Should your avatar comfort your grandchildren? Or should it just organize your inbox? Isn't technology wonderful? Don't you just love all the wonderful things that it's bringing to us?
You. Yes, you. Do you dread waking up in the morning? Are you feeling helpless in your society? Perhaps even a bit lost? Well, look no further. At the Capitol, we offer an escape, a new beginning, a lifetime of unending joy. We have an abundance of attractions so captivating, you'll wonder how you ever lived without them. Let's take a look, shall we? Take a ride on the cosmic carnival. Let go of decisions and let the carnival choose each thrill for you. Simply sit back and soak in fun. As you traverse our radiant metropolis, bring our latest gizmo, the mood on the go. With the swipe of a thumb, alter your mood instantly and experience any emotion you wish. You can also use it to instantaneously replace your companion if things go south. How convenient. And our most popular attraction, the Dream Machine. Relive your most cherished moments in vivid, extraordinary detail. No need to cling to old photos.
I love you.
Live in the past forever. You might be wondering, what's the cost for such a paradise? Well, dear viewer, some prices aren't paid in gold or silver. We only ask you for one thing. Your identity. We'll need the very core of who you are. It's a small price for a lifetime of unending joy, don't you think? And no need to fear crime or violence. We'll always keep an eye on you. For your safety.
Yeah, for your safety. Yeah. Yeah, that's an excellent piece. It's a YouTube channel called AZE Alter. AZE Alter. Yeah, that's the Faustian bargain that they want people to make with them, isn't it? Well, when we look at these techno brats, it's just come out that Musk wants to, quote, seed the earth with a legion of high IQ babies. He sees a looming demographic apocalypse, says the report from Wall Street Journal. An investigation by the Wall Street Journal focused on what it described as a harem drama surrounding Musk. He's had at least 14 known children with four different women, although the actual number could be much higher. I guess he sees himself as a patriarch of a new technocracy, right? His relationships with the women reportedly often involve hush money payments and heated parental disputes. At the heart of Musk's reproductive drive lies his, quote, dark view, unquote, of the future in which humanity could perish as a species due to poor demographics. The Wall Street Journal says he is driven to correct the historic moment by helping to seed the earth with more human beings of high intelligence. You know, people like him. That's what we need. It's more Elon Musk's. Maybe we do. I don't know. Ashley St. Clair, I think we need more people who have a different world perspective on this. Ashley St. Clair, one of the women that Musk allegedly had an affair with and who claims to be the mother of one of his children, showed the Wall Street Journal a message purportedly sent by the billionaire. She's gotten involved in a very kind of nasty back and forth. She seems to feel jilted by him. And in terms of his paternity acknowledgement. In it, Musk allegedly referred to his offspring as a, quote, legion, invoking the ancient Roman military units known for expanding imperial reach, and insisted on making even more babies with other women, quote, to reach legion level before the apocalypse, he reportedly said. To do that, we'll need to use surrogates. In 2021, Musk said that the low birth rates were one of the biggest risks to civilization. If people don't have more children, civilization is going to crumble. Well, let me just say, you know, I think it is interesting when we do look at the declining, it's collapsing. Birth rates throughout Western civilization are collapsing, and there's a lot of different aspects to it. There are social and spiritual aspects to the fact that people don't want to have children. And, of course, there's physical aspects to it. You know, the pollutants that are in our food and our drugs and the COVID shot, you know, significantly reducing the pregnancies of women who have gotten shot. And so there's all these different aspects of it, and a lot of those things are being done to us. And it's difficult for us to, we can try to avoid taking the shot or whatever, but it's so pervasive in our environment, so pervasive in the food that we eat, it's difficult to do something about it. But the one thing that we can do about it is we can change our thinking about it. It's kind of interesting that Musk and the technocrats have a clear energetic vision of the future that they want to pursue. I don't share it. I think it's evil. I think it is secular, atheist, opposed to God, and so forth. Why is it that Christians don't embrace that? You know, we look at times of renewal throughout the Bible. It's always spoken about God turning the hearts of the fathers towards the children. Our society has gone so far down the other road that we're going to have the hearts of the mothers turn toward children. It's for the first time ever, we have women less interested in having children, less interested in having a marriage than we do men. That is what they have done with putting women into the workforce and telling them that that is their future. That's the only important and honorable thing that they can do is to work for a corporation. You know, don't work with your family. Don't serve your family. Don't create a unit there. No, you get absorbed by the corporate Borg. That's where your fulfillment is going to lie. Now, that is a lie. I mentioned this at the very end of the show yesterday. A number of U.S. adults don't want children. The number who don't want it has doubled over the past 20 years. They say, we found the percentage of non-parents who don't want any children rose from 14% in 2002 to 29% in 2023, Michigan State University study. They refer to the people who don't want children, they refer to them as child-free, who never want to have any children. The Bible refers to these people as lovers of self. Lovers of self. Of the more than 42,000 participants who did not have children, 29% were child-free. The number of people who would voluntarily forgo having children far exceeded those who were unable to have children for biological reasons, which was 3.7%. So, most people are choosing not to have children. Yeah, there are physical things in our environment that are harmful. That's about 4% of it. But 30% of it is people who have been poisoned, their minds have been poisoned against it, and they don't realize what they're missing. I've known a lot of people like that.
That to me is one of the saddest things about the time we live in. Just,
yeah,
it's hard to believe. Just so readily and willingly giving up on the greatest physical blessing that you can have.
Yeah, yeah. And you know that because of, you know, being a father now. It is amazing, isn't it?
It really is. Just getting to watch him grow and change day by day is incredible.
And interact, you know. He's a really sweet kid. I mean, when he looks at you, you know, he gives you a big smile and everything. He's only about 5 months old, is that it?
Yeah, he'll be 6 months old on the 6th of next month.
Yeah. Yeah, and they miss out on all that stuff. As a matter of fact, we got a lot of grumpy people who now want to ban pets for the climate as well. We'll talk about that in a minute. You know, you give up on children, on pets, on everything, but, you know, you've got your iPhone there. Isn't that great? That's there to fulfill you.
I see so many people talking about, oh, I don't want kids because I want to travel. I want to see things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's nothing you're going to see that's more beautiful than your own, child's smile.
That's right.
That's, I can't even describe how sad that is to me. Just sad and pathetic and just so utterly lonely.
That's right. Yeah. And you know, it is the kind of thing. If people who like to travel, you know, I've met a lot of people, especially people from, it typically seems to affect people from really big cities, who frequently I've noticed are not cosmopolitan. They're very provincial. They've, many cases, Karen is from New York, met so many of her friends who've never been out of New York. They've not even traveled through America, so they don't know what they're missing, right? And they have this really strange, distorted perspective of what the rest of the world is like because they've never ventured out. And I think the same, you could say that to your travel buddies, you know, just think how that has opened up your mind. Well, that's nothing compared to having a child and taking that journey. That opens you up to a lot more stuff that you have just decided that, well, I've already got everything that I need. I don't need to try that.
Especially in today's age where by travel, they usually just mean going somewhere and getting drunk in a different location.
Yeah, they're not going somewhere to live in the culture or anything like that, right?
Yeah.
That's what I think of travel. I mean, you know, when Karen and I got married.
To go to the beach and get drunk there in Mexico or Spain or Italy. Yeah, that's a real good use of your time and money. Excellent work. Great planning.
We decided for a lot less money than we would have spent to go to some resort or go on a cruise that, I graduated in December. I didn't start until March. And so we got married in January and we went to, the UK and went cheap. You know, I mean, we did everything that was free. We hardly had any money for eating even, but, we stayed for a couple months. And as a matter of fact, we were having such a good time, we extended it. And, things got really tight in terms of money. But we lived in the culture there for a couple of months. And that was really great. And, you know, went to a lot of free museums and things like that. But, yeah, it was as opposed to, you know, something where you go to a resort where everything is just, and like you said, just get drunk or eat on a cruise or this or that. That's not necessarily, you're not learning anything. You're not really, you know, you're taking a vacation, but it's not like I think of travel. I think of it as learning something anyway. From 2000 to 2022, the fertility rate in the U.S. dropped from 2.06 children per woman to only 1.67. Well below the replacement level of around 2.1 children. It wasn't even at the replacement level in 2000. And so, you know, that's the issue. It's not even the physical stuff. It's the other stuff. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk a little bit about what the environmentalists have in mind for our four-legged friends. They don't like children. They don't like humans. They don't like cars. They don't like dogs and cats either. We'll be right back.
Thank you. listening to The David Knight Show.
Yeah, welcome back. A comment from what we were talking about before from Rumble on Rumble from Atomic Dog. He says, my wife had an argument with her sister about Israel. The sister believes that God gave the land to the Jews and they have every right to wipe out Gaza. My wife just gave up. Well, you know, God has given them the land. He's taken them out of the land. He's given them the land. He's taken them out of the land. Seems like it's God's decision, not Netanyahu's decision. They were taken out of the land, not because they didn't have the best swords or spears or arrows or tanks or jets or whatever. They were taken out because God said, you're going to be taken out. And having more of those things and killing more people is just kind of a prideful, faithless way to say that God is going to fulfill those things. Anyway, I want to talk before we get into the pets and the climate stuff, a little bit more about AI. OpenAI is secretly building a social network. They saw Musk doing that on X with Grok, and they got to do it as well. But there's a reason that they're doing this kind of stuff. OpenAI has been secretly building its own social media platform, which The Verge reports is intended to resemble X. They said it was a social media feed that revolves around ChatGPT's new image generation capabilities, which they just recently upgraded significantly with the Gimli-style AI images and things like that that everybody's using. So they want to combine that into a social media thing. It sounds reminiscent of how X directly integrates Musk's Grok AI model into the website, where it operates both as a standalone chatbot while also being capable of responding directly to users' posts at their request. The Grok integration with X has made everyone jealous, especially how people create viral tweets by getting it to say something stupid. And that's what it seemed to be really good at. But I think there's another aspect of this that they're not talking about here, and that is the fact that the AI feeds on our conversations. It feeds on human content. Even if it is stupid human content, like on social media, it still feeds on it. And it is constantly learning, watching and learning from us. And whoever has the most access to people, that's one of the reasons why they want to shut down TikTok. So all of them are competing to try to get humans to interact with their AI. To train their AI. That's the bottom line with all this stuff. They are watching, they are imitating, they're trying to clone us, and that's what this is all really about. Of course, also from the government's perspective, using social media to propagandize us and then be able to get perfect feedback on whether or not we're buying the lies that they feed us. A former OpenAI employee rages against Sam Altman, said he is a person of low integrity, and has jumped into a lawsuit that is there. This individual jumped ship, went to Anthropic, co-founded by former OpenAIers over AI safety and ethics concerns. Researcher Todor Markov is now claiming in a new legal filing that his ex-boss is essentially a really bad dude, says Futurism. The root of Markov's complaint, as he explained it in his portion of a lengthy amicus brief, that also includes statements from 11 other former OpenAI employees. The roots of it are that Altman's alleged lies about non-disparagement agreements that staffers are forced to sign early in their time at the company. Last year, the researcher discovered the existence of the clause that essentially made him and other departing employees give up their right to ever speak critically about OpenAI if they wanted to keep their vested equity in the multi-billion-dollar former employer. During an all-hands meeting about the controversial clause, Altman claimed that he had no knowledge of the existence, only to be caught with egg on his face immediately after when Vox published leaked documents showing that he had signed off on it. Altman, he says, was, quote, a person of low integrity who had directly lied to employees about their restrictive non-disparagement agreements. This suggested to him that the CEO was very likely lying to employees about a number of other important topics, including its commitment to building safe artificial general intelligence. Well, of course, anybody can lie. And if there's a great deal of money involved, well, you got people who will kill you for that money, as we have seen with the pharmaceutical companies and others. But there's now, you remember the figure robots. They were very impressive. those are the ones where the guy is interacting with it, and it talks like a California dude. Remember that? Oh, yeah, man. Okay, yeah. Got the. Okay, sure. Sure enough. Yeah, I'll do that. Remember that? Get me an orange or something like that. And it looks around and it finds the orange and hands it to him or puts it in the refrigerator. Or look at these things and figure out where they need to go. You know, you got a basket of items in front of you. Do some of them need to go in the refrigerator? Do they need to go in the cabinet? What, and all that. And it was very impressive. I was a little bit of a lag there, but it was very impressive in terms of its fluidity of movement and its understanding of that. And so they're one of the big companies that is out there competing with Elon Musk and his Optimus robots. And they all want to get into the factories to replace us. I mean, it's huge. I talked about it the other day. There's a Chinese company that's doing it. They want to make sure they've got 5,000 robots this year because that's what Musk has said he's going to do is put 5,000 robots out into factories. So I said, we're going to do that too. We're going to match that goal. And so, both that Chinese company and Elon Musk wants to get 5,000 robots out there. Figure has worked with BMW and their car factory in South Carolina. And they said, their CEO said, that they are already doing manufacturing work at BMW with that robot. But it appears that maybe that's not really what happened.
The humanoid robotics industry just got hit with a bombshell. Figure AI, one of Silicon Valley's most hyped startups, is facing serious allegations of exaggerating its progress with BMW. And insiders are finally speaking out. A new investigative report from Fortune has exposed shocking discrepancies between Figure CEO Brett Adcock's public claims and what's actually happening inside BMW's Spartanburg, South Carolina factory. While Adcock has been telling investors and the media that a fleet of Figure 02 robots are performing end-to-end operations at the plant, BMW's own statements reveal a very different reality. What began as whispers in manufacturing circles has now exploded into a full-blown controversy that threatens to undermine the company's credibility just as it seeks to raise a staggering $1.5 billion in new funding at a $40 billion valuation. A figure that would place it above established giants like Ford Motor Company. At the heart of this growing scandal is a fundamental disconnect between what Figure AI's charismatic CEO, Brett Adcock, has been telling the world about his company's robots working in BMW's Spartanburg, South Carolina plant, and what multiple independent reports confirm is actually happening on the factory floor. The implications of this discrepancy extend far beyond one startup's growing pains. They strike at the very heart of the burgeoning humanoid robotics industry and raise uncomfortable questions about whether we're witnessing genuine technological breakthroughs or carefully orchestrated hype designed to separate investors from their money. The controversy came to a head when Fortune Tech correspondent Jason Del Rey decided to fact-check a February LinkedIn post by Adcock that boldly declared Figure had a fleet of robots performing end-to-end operations at the BMW facility. This would represent a quantum leap for humanoid robotics, the kind of seamless integration into complex manufacturing processes that the industry has been promising for years, but has consistently failed to deliver at scale. Del Rey's subsequent investigation revealed a far less impressive reality. According to BMW's own spokesperson, as of February, the automaker was merely conducting off-hour tests with a single Figure robot at any given time, with the machine performing just one basic task, retrieving metal sheets, and placing them into fixtures in preparation for welding. This is about as far from end-to-end operations as one could imagine in automotive manufacturing. When pressed about the glaring discrepancy between Adcock's claims and BMW's account, the automaker declined to explain, and instead directed all questions back to Figure's founder, who notably failed to respond to Fortune's inquiries. This stonewalling only served to heighten suspicions that something was amiss in what was being billed as one of the most significant humanoid robotics deployments to date. The Wall Street Journal soon followed with its own investigation, uncovering additional inconsistencies in Figure's narrative.
Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't that special? You know, we've seen a similar thing with a car company that was called Nikolai, right? Referring to Tesla. They had large 18-wheeler trucks that they were building, and they were caught doing all kinds of fraudulent exhibitions. For example, you know, showing the truck that was supposedly operating, when in fact it was just coasting downhill. and many other things of that ilk. That company is now folded. It's got lawsuits, and the government is coming after them for fraud. That was Nikola. Well, you know, the Figure Robot is very impressive, but they were looking for a lot of money, as he pointed out. They were going to get funding that was going to be more than Ford Motor Company has. And so we see that as they're making these claims about what's going on with BMW, BMW doesn't want to say anything. They don't want to get involved in this, but their silence is deafening, isn't it? And it's the same type of thing. You've got some business reporters who are saying, well, something doesn't add up here. It looks like they are hyping this in a way that's not true. So we see Sam Altman is hyping stuff like that to the federal government, telling them it's just too dangerous for people, everybody, to have access to this technology. It needs to be restricted to me and maybe one or two other people, right? And we need your money as well. We need government money. That's Sam Altman. We know about Elon Musk. We see what's happening with Figure Robots. And now we have NVIDIA, which is at the core of a lot of this stuff, their chip that is there. The U.S. restricted exports of NVIDIA chips that are used by China's DeepSeek AI. And so the Trump administration, a couple of days ago, told NVIDIA that they could not export their powerful H20 chips to China. NVIDIA said the restrictions would cost the company up to $5.5 billion. The H20 chip is not the most powerful product in NVIDIA's inventory, but until now, it has been the most powerful chip that NVIDIA could legally sell to China. So what they're saying is that, you know, they would allow them to give a less powerful chip to China, but now they're restricting even that, even more so. Do you think that's going to work? The sensational debut of DeepSeek prompted Chinese tech companies to order more than $16 billion worth of H20 chips. Banning the H20 makes little sense to us, said an analyst speaking to investors. He said the H20 performance is low, well below already available Chinese alternatives. A ban essentially simply hands the Chinese AI market over to Huawei. So what he's saying is, by not allowing, by putting a tariff, not even a tariff, but putting a ban on this, what you're doing is you're helping Huawei, because now they've got a market. They don't have to compete with NVIDIA, which has got better chips than them. So first you told them they can't put out their best chips. There's no restrictions on Huawei improving their stuff. And now you're going to reduce it even further. So you just basically handed over the Chinese market to Huawei. And they will get stronger with this. Not only that, but hasn't 50 years of drug prohibition shown us that you're not going to be able to stop that? If they wanted the NVIDIA chips, as a matter of fact, not even the H20, but whatever it is that is more powerful than that. If the Chinese want the more powerful chips, they can get the more powerful chips. You can't say that, you know, when you look at one of the reasons that prohibition doesn't work, people would look at vice, like alcohol prohibition and other things like that. And you would have, it's very easy to corrupt law enforcement and other people who would be enforcing that, because they look at it as like, well, that's not hurting anybody, you know, or that's consensual, you should say. That's vice. Yeah, vice does hurt people, but they look at it as, well, that's not the same category as murder or even as theft. So, yeah, if they want to pay me to let this product go through, you know, this is a marketplace of willing buyer, willing seller. You know, it's easy for them to rationalize that, even if it is something that is harmful, like fentanyl or whatever. They'll rationalize that and let it go. That's how it corrupts our government, our law enforcement, things like that. But when you get to something like a computer chip, they are really going to be saying, well, I don't really care if the Chinese have this computer chip, and if you're going to give me some money on the side, I'll let this thing go through. Or they buy it in another country, you know, they buy it from another country. The same way that they were doing it, the reverse of what they were doing with their manufacturing, you know. They would do most of the manufacturing in China, then they would ship it over for final assembly or whatever in Vietnam, and then Vietnam could sell it into the United States. All of this stuff about prohibition and restrictions of products, and it just doesn't work. Practically, it doesn't work. And you can look at the market effects of this and how it's going to backfire right there. They've now helped the Chinese rather than hurting them. And so NVIDIA is trying to suck up to the United States as the U.S. is shutting down their ability to export a lesser chip, not their state-of-the-art stuff. NVIDIA announces, quote, the engines of the world's AI infrastructure will be built in America for the first time. So they're pledging their allegiance to America. Total AI infrastructure by NVIDIA could total $500 billion over the next 4 years. And they may not be allowed to sell a lot of it to other people, depending on Trump or whoever replaces them and their attitudes towards us. They said tens of gigawatt AI factories are expected to be built in the coming years, said NVIDIA. Manufacturing NVIDIA AI chips and supercomputers for American AI factories is expected to create a massive number of jobs for robots who are going to create other robots. And then right after making that announcement as a company, the CEO of NVIDIA flew to Beijing and told the Chinese officials there, quote, we grew up in China. That's the same type of thing you see with Elon Musk. They're not going to give up the Chinese market, one way or the other. NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang boarded a private jet to Beijing shortly after the U.S. Commerce Department announced a new export licensing requirement for the H20 AI chips. Once there, Huang met with the head of a Chinese state-backed trade body, where he reaffirmed NVIDIA's commitment to the Chinese market despite a deepening trade war. Huang emphasized that China remains an important market for NVIDIA and expressed hope for continued cooperation with Beijing and said, we come from here. Well, there you go. How is this all going to work out? Who knows? But, you know, these guys, they'll do anything for money. It's the love of money. They have no loyalty to anything or to anyone. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Listening to the David Knight Show.
He's Trump in the rain with his umbrella.
I'm singing in the rain. Yes.
Yeah, we're all trying to sing in the rain, the reign of Trump, R-E-I-G-N. Yeah, we're singing in the rain about how are we going to manage with the uncertainty. You know, it was James Carville who said, hey, it's the economy, stupid. They don't care about Monica Lewinsky. It's the economy, stupid. Well, you know, when we talk about the economy, guess what? It's the uncertainty, stupid. It's the stupid uncertainty. And Trump has put restrictions on us that are as even more confining than that airplane door that he couldn't seem to fit the umbrella through. Businesses are reporting fewer orders, less employment, weaker expectations. The only thing going up is prices, says Reason. And, of course, what do we call that? Stagflation or dragflation, as Gerald Celente called it. Yes, the uncertainty. Last Tuesday, the day before Trump's Liberation Day tariffs were set to be imposed, White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt was asked by a reporter about the possibility of last-minute changes to the import taxes. The president was asked and answered this yesterday, she said. He is not considering an extension or delay. But then less than 24 hours later, the White House announced that many of those tariffs would, in fact, be delayed. Then Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, said this was Trump's strategy all along. That same cycle of events has played out several times in the past 3 months. New tariffs on imports from China and Mexico in early February. Days after they were set to take effect, Trump postponed them. On April the 11th, the White House announced a sweeping set of tariff exemptions for televisions, phones, computer chips, and other electronics imported from China. But by April the 13th, 2 days later, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said those tariff exemptions were temporary. Later the same day, Trump denied any exemptions had been made at all. The president now reportedly is considering another delay, this one on the 25% tariff that he slapped on all imported cars and car parts. So what tariffs will America charge tomorrow? And what imports will be subject to them? It seems to depend on the whims of one man, writes Reason. That's what I've said all along. We can talk about the best way to raise taxes. We can talk about whether or not we should cut government instead of raising taxes, instead of continuing to kick the debt can down the road. But the question is, what is this uncertainty? Just takes all of that talk off the table. There's no point in talking about an income tax versus tariffs or an income tax plus tariffs or any of this stuff when he's constantly changing everything. And again, this is why the power to do tariffs was given to the Congress, who foolishly said, in an emergency, the president can do it. And this president does everything under a claimed emergency. That's his way that he operates. He declares an emergency, whether it's something that's real or not real. And then he says that that gives him the right to act as a dictator. And so we have martial law exerted over one thing after the other. The same playbook that he was using in 2020. Same thing. So Reason says it's not a great, that's not great for a lot of people who are trying to run businesses in the current environment. A New York-based importer and distributor of wines and spirits says the new tariffs have made it impossible to plan ahead. He said, could you imagine if I had a supplier and every time I talked to them, they gave me a different price? This is the equivalent of that. He is also a plaintiff in a new lawsuit, joining with several other companies, to question Trump's authority to do this without congressional approval. Is there an emergency? Well, see, that's what all the nonsense about fentanyl coming from Canada was about. He claimed that, you know, he claimed something that was not true, just like he did with COVID. And then he pronounced that it was an emergency, even though it was a lie. And then he said, well, now I have the power to do this and to do that. The threats, the uncertainty have made it hard to make business decisions, said the co-president of Wyoming Machine, a Minnesota-based sheet metal fabricator that relies on aluminum imports from Canada. The New York Federal Reserve Bank's monthly survey of manufacturers published earlier this week reported a sharp drop in what it calls, quote, forward-looking indicators. That is, what businesses expect the next 6 months to look like. Even global businesses don't seem to be immune. The CEO of the Dutch firm ASML, the world's largest producer of the equipment needed to make semiconductors and other advanced computer chips, attributed lower than expected sales to America's new tariff regime. He said that it is, quote, creating a new uncertainty. Yeah, it is kind of interesting. You know, when we look at high tech, it's a Dutch firm that basically makes the machines that are used by the Taiwanese to make the chips that are used by America, especially in the high-tech military stuff. It's all distributed all over the place. You can't just do a rug pull on all that stuff. I mean, it's deeply intertwined and embedded. And you can do that, but it's going to rip the heart out of the entire global economy. And it is a global economy. You know, you can start to try. What you can do is you can get rid of the regulations and the taxes and stuff like that here, things that would enable it. For the longest time, we've had presidents who said, in my administration, I created this many number of jobs. And I think, no, you didn't. You got out of the way and you let people take risks and invest their money and do their hard work. Their blood, sweat, and tears is what created those jobs. You didn't do anything. You just got out of the way, if you did get out of the way. Or in many cases, a lot of them were bragging about the fact that they had, you know, created jobs by shoveling a ton of money over to a corporation. That kind of crony capitalism, that kind of central planning, is not effective. And so they won't give freedom a chance. Freedom is how we could beat everybody else, is how we beat everybody else in the first time. But instead, they decide they're going to take a central planning route. The threats, the uncertainty, have made it hard to make business decisions. That's exactly it. The outlook for global trade has deteriorated sharply due to the surge in tariffs and trade policies and the uncertainty. During Trump's first term in office, the uncertainty created by his trade policies then reduced aggregate U.S. investment by as much as $47 billion in 2018, according to a 2020 study in the Journal of Monetary Economics. And guess who took it the worst? His big supporters in the rural areas, the farmers. He put them on stimmy checks and universal basic, very basic income, welfare, before he did it to everybody in 2020. All measures suggest that uncertainty about trade policy has recently shot up to levels that have not been seen since the 1970s. Costs are almost certain to be higher this time because the size and scope of Trump's new trade war have greatly expanded, as has the uncertainty that it created. You go back and look at the lockdown, the fear, the uncertainty, the doubt, right? Fear, uncertainty, and doubt. That's what he was doing in 2020. It's all back. Mr. Chaos. It is obviously difficult to objectively measure something as frothy and as fleeting as uncertainty, but some economists have tried. The Economic Policy Uncertainty Index is based on newspaper reports, Congressional Budget Office reports, and surveys of economic forecasters by the Federal Reserve. Right now, the global index is at the highest level it has ever been, surpassing even the previous peak set by Trump with the COVID-19 pandemic and lockdown, and far higher than it was during Trump's 2018 tariff phase. So the firms, they said, may delay investment and hiring during periods of high uncertainty. Households may exercise precautionary reductions in spending by increasing their savings rate in anticipation of possible changes to income or to wealth. Our quotes are down, our orders are down, our purchases are down. Purchase orders are down, he said, as president of Canadian-based Cavalier Tool and Manufacturing. These are the very types of jobs that Trump says he wants. As Trump has targeted imports from Canada and higher tariffs, people are scrambling and pivoting. The reality is that almost nothing is moving. Well, it's all worth it, isn't it? As long as we don't have people buying stuff from China. Except Trump does. If you go back to 2016, this article, this news report showing Trump having China make all of his campaign stuff.
There's little evidence of a trade war at the Jiahao Flag Company in Anhui Province. Workers bustle and sewing machines hum. A current hot seller, blue and white banners declaring the centerpiece of Trump's re-election campaign.
What I'm making here now is a Trump banner. I know that he's the U.S. president. Every day we must produce over 1,000 of this. We already made so many batches of them.
The banners highlight a paradox in China-U.S. relations under the current Trump administration. At about $1 a piece, even the suppliers to the Trump campaign can't resist the low price. The factory also made banners for his 2016 campaign and said its business has been great since then.
Buy American and hire American.
Trump has long railed against Chinese imports and launched a controversial trade strategy this year to punish Beijing. Yet his move is merely making America more expensive. The U.S. Department of Commerce said flax and other textile products will be subject to a 10% levy. One seller said that would be enough to double the price of a Make America Great Again hat to $20 a pop. And his hardline stance towards China could eventually repel suppliers like the Jiahao Flag Company.
Personally, this is my own feeling, but if he continues to demand tariff increases as he has been doing, I definitely would not be able to accept more orders. That's because everyone can have a patriotic heart, so we won't let him improve his own economy, while us Chinese just shoot ourselves in the foot. I know that Trump's tariffs targeting China will have some effect, but we're not worried at all since we're producing foreign flax every single day.
If Trump's midterm election rallies have no flags to fly, there's only one man to blame. Sun Tianyuan, CGTN.
I saw that on social media, and what really caught my attention was the first comment underneath it was from somebody who was some anonymous troll who had like 24 followers or something, and he said there's no such thing as China 24 news channel, because that's the people who put that together, and you see the logo that down there. So people replied to it and gave links to the website and all the rest of this. I mean, it's amazing how these trolls will come out and just say the biggest bunch of nonsense. I don't know if they're paid to say that or they're just, you know, camp followers or whatever. A good example of this is the article I mentioned briefly the other day. Spencer Morrison, writing for Chronicles, says tariffs are essential to a free people. And I said, what a joke. The American Revolution was fighting tariffs on tea. Yeah, taxes did not make us great. Taxes, you might say, are a necessary evil, but they're not going to make our country great. There's better and there's worse ways to collect taxes. But the very worst thing that we could do is to have this uncertainty. Meanwhile, the Border Patrol, Customs and Border Patrol, said the latest tariffs have generated $500 million, well below Trump's estimate. Yeah, so that was over 2 weeks. So, I mean, that's like $1 billion a month, $12 billion a year. Yeah, we're going to balance the budget there, aren't we? Well, let's hope that it doesn't go up even higher than that. But the economic destruction that it does is just truly astounding. We're going to take a break, and we're going to have Gerald Celente join us with Trends Research and get Gerald's take on, you know, right now everything is moving so fast. We go 2 weeks, and it's just a ton of things that have happened. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Defending the American dream. You're listening to The David Knight Show.
Joining us now is Gerald Celente. Always a pleasure to have Gerald on, and we've had so much that has happened economically, especially in the last couple of weeks. I wanted to get Gerald's take on it. Trendsresearch.com is where you can find his publication. You can see a sample of that. It's a magnificent and thorough, very lengthy weekly journal that comes out now, and you can save 10% off with the code KNIGHT. And I think, Gerald, what's that work out to be about for the week? It works out to be half the price of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times for a day, something like that. Good to have you on.
$2.50 a week.
Yeah.
And again, the magazine's over 200 pages, the Trends Journal.
Wow. Yeah. And no fluff. You know, that's the other thing too. You're focusing on what's really happening. And, you know, I talked about this last couple of weeks. We now got people talking about the commercial real estate issue because that's really surfacing. And, you know, you've been talking about that for years, way ahead of the curve, saying this is what's going to happen. It's going to affect the banks and many other things as well.
And look at our forecast for gold.
Yeah.
when we made it, the forecast, it would be golden year for gold in 2024. Back then, gold prices were $2,041 an ounce. And today, I just looked.
It's been up in the 3,300.
Close today. Yeah, $3,327 an ounce.
That could pay for a lot of subscriptions for a lot of years, couldn't it?
Now, this is very important. Yeah. A couple of days ago, price of gold went up over $100 an ounce.
Mm-hmm.
One day, went up like $107 an ounce. Not a word in the Wall Street Journal.
Really?
That you pay $5 a day for.
Wow. Wow.
Not a word last week. Last weekend, when gold prices spiked throughout the week,
mm-hmm.
not one word in the Wall Street Journal that you pay $6 a day for on the weekend edition. Not one article before we went on the air today in the Wall Street Journal about the spiking prices of gold or the toilet paper record, which people call the New York Times. They call themselves the paper record. This is yesterday's edition, this big, stupid little cartoon for little girls and boys with brains the size of a pea. The reason they have these big cartoon pictures here is because they don't have journalists anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So they fill up the space with stupid pictures on every page. Yeah, look. I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
You see it?
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. It looks like not USA Today.
Not a word about gold.
Wow. Yeah.
The mainstream media is silencing this. I've been at this for 45 years. I made my name buying gold. And when I booked Trends 2000, Trend Tracking, I told the story back in 1978 when the Iranian conflict broke out, and they taught us to hate the Iranians, of course, without telling us how the United States and the MI6 overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953, because that lousy Iranian piece of scum said, "No, that oil doesn't belong to Anglo-Iranian Oil, better known today as BP, or ExxonMobil, Standard Oil, better known today as ExxonMobil.
Mm-hmm.
It belongs to the Iranian people." No, it doesn't. "We're going to steal your oil, and we're going to kill everybody that supports you. And then we're going to bring in the Shah and the Savak, the secret police that made the SS look good."
Yeah.
So when the revolution happened, you know, I knew this thing is real. But they just taught the people to hate the Iranians. So I did oil and gold futures, put a $5,000 bet into each one, and brought it almost up to $750,000. This is 1970s.
Wow.
I lost most of the money. I'm gambling away. I didn't know what I was doing. I was a young guy.
Mm-hmm.
But my first buy of gold was around $163, $173 an ounce. I've been following gold since then.
Wow. Yeah, the revolution was not televised in Iran, right? Americans are clueless about it, and they don't talk about it in the media either. But, yeah, it's amazing when you look at what has happened with gold over the last couple of years, and especially over the last 2 years. You know, when you talk about in 2024, it truly is amazing.
We used to have commercials at the end of the Trends Journal thing, you know, just promoting the Trends Journal. And I had Eric King, King World News. Salenti called the bottom of gold. I called the bottom of gold a couple of years ago. This is the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen gold take off like this. And this is the important element of what you were listening before about the uncertainty with Trump. Every day he changes his mind because mm-hmm. he's out of his mind, but that's another story. The uncertainty is we are on the verge of nuclear annihilation and the end of life on Earth. And the people that are watching the geopolitical without swallowing the stupid crap that they're shoving down people's throats know how bad it is. And the worst of the worst is the disgusting, murderous Israel genocide slaughter of the people in Gaza. And maybe they'll throw me out of the country for saying that.
Yeah, that's what I thought about.
How dare I'm an anti-Semite. Shove it. Save your anti-Semite crap for some little gutless clown. Because number one, the people running Israel, they're not Semites. Semites are people from the Mesopotamia region. These are all Eastern European Jewish people. Was Netanyahu's real name?
I don't know.
Milikowski? Oh, yeah. Ben-Gurion? Oh, you made that name up, Ben-Gurion Green? These are Eastern Europeans. They're not Semites. Number two, you're against the massive slaughter and starvation of people. Oh, not my language, United Nations. One after another, right in front of everybody's eyes. And you're saying, by definition, oh, I forgot, Donald Trump's little arrogant son-in-law boy, Jared Kushner. Oh, that's very, quote, valuable waterfront property.
Yeah.
Oh, that was only a year ago.
Oh, yeah,
Trump,
we had Trump.
To turn it into the Riviera.
That's right. Yeah, that was the amazing thing, Trump coming out with that. And as I talked about earlier, you know, they have put the defense minister of Israel has said no humanitarian aid whatsoever. You got children who are starving, and they're going to starve them to death, so that Trump can what? Set up a casino there? You know, is that what they're going to do? It's a real estate development project?
Where is the anger of people? Oh, by the way, they had that again. You can't make this crap up, but everything's turned to crap, so you can make it up. They about how Bernie Sanders and that Cortez thing, how they're enlightening the Democratic people.
Yeah, all right.
These are the two jerks that you could look to. Oh, Bernie Sanders, they had a big rally, these big rallies he's having. And the people put up the flags, Free Palestine, they got thrown out. And you know what Bernie Sanders came out and said? I hate this line. You could shove it up you know what. Israel has the right to defend itself. How many times have they repeated that propaganda line of crap? Oh, Israel bombing the hell out of Syria now?
Yeah.
We gotta stop them. They can't come near our borders. Oh, you're in violation of ceasefire agreement in Lebanon? Bombing the hell out of Lebanon? We can bomb anybody we want! And shove your chosen people line up your you know what. Oh, I'm just a guinea from the Bronx? You're a chosen people? I'm just a piece of scum? Oh no, let's listen to Naomi Wolf, a Jewish woman. She's, that's a lot of baloney, this chosen people. God chooses people by their morality and how they live in the spirit of God. Has nothing to do with a religion. Got it?
Well, yeah. God chose to take them out of the land because of immorality. He could choose to put them back in if he wishes, but it's not, they want the fruit of this without having the root of it, which is God. But, you know, you mentioned earlier that criticizing, as we've seen now, people being snatched off the street, and there's a smear campaign that happens in the conservative media, to try to justify Trump snatching people off the street because they wrote an op-ed piece, or snatching them off the street because they were exercising free speech on the college campuses. And, you know, and when I look at the obscene amounts of money that are being given to Columbia University, $400 million, and the even more obscene amount of money, $9 billion being given to Harvard, but they're going to keep giving them that money as long as they don't criticize a foreign political entity. And that's the issue here. But it's also the issue that when people are here legally, this last guy they pulled off, I talked about this yesterday, he was on his way to an interview for citizenship. He'd been here for 10 years, and you don't get that interview unless you have a clean record and so forth. And he was here legally. The people who are here legally have a right to speak just like Americans do. They have a right to due process. And yet when we see Trump doing this to everybody, they immediately tar and feather them as terrorists, as violence and all the rest of the stuff, and that's not true. But what's really frightening, and you alluded to it, is the fact that Trump has said to this guy in El Salvador, you're going to need to build some more prisons because we're going to send some American citizens there. What do you think about that? I mean, it's amazing.
I know. Yeah, I'll be on the list.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Yeah. Well, it goes back to, you know, his Alien Enemies Act, which he's deported these gang members with. And I'm all for deporting the gang members, MS-13 and the, you know, the trendy guys, the trendy Aragua, whatever they call them. I'm all for deporting those types of people, but we need to have some due process if they're going to be sent into an extremely harsh environment there in those prisons. It's more than just deporting somebody who's here illegally. And the Trump administration even said that they made a mistake on it. But now they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. They say, well, you know, we had him on a watch list. It's like, I began at InfoWars with a story about a guy who was put on a no-fly list. Wrongfully put on a no-fly list. He doesn't know how he got on. They wouldn't tell him. This is a star chamber process. That was happening in 2012. He was vetted by the TSA. He was vetted by the FBI. He had a firearms license. He was flying on a military plane to visit his wife, who was in Japan working for the military. And he gets to Hawaii. And as that intermediate flight is about to take off again for Japan, the last leg, some guys come on and pull him off and say, you can't fly, you're on a no-fly list. And he's stuck in Hawaii, he can't fly. And he can't get any information from anybody about how he got on there. That kind of star chamber process is not what we want to have in this country. And you know, the problem is that Trump is taking this Alien Enemies Act, which is part of the Alien and Sedition Act. He's accusing CBS and other news media of being treasonous, which is basically sedition. And so what he's doing is he's taking the old Alien and Sedition Act, which Jefferson and Madison hated, and he's starting to apply that in the 21st century. And he wants to apply it to American citizens, not just to people who are here, foreign entities, foreign citizens.
No, the guy is a 3 months. He's in office for 3 months. And look at what he's done in 3 months.
Yeah. He's a wrecking ball, isn't he?
Yeah. He's an arrogant, arrogant, narcissistic guy. End of story. You know, I told you, I had lunch with his brother, Robin.
Yeah.
Back in 2017. And the brother told me that the father, when he died, left the family over $500 million worth of real estate.
Wow. Wow.
This Abigail Disney, Walt Disney's grandniece or something, she wrote an article in The Guardian. I read it. And she wrote about Trump. Basically, what a spoiled boy he is. He inherited everything.
She would know. She would know about that, right?
Yeah. But she fights for some good things. And, you know, so I applaud her on that end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everything, but who does everything everybody likes? You know, sure. You know. But anyway, and that's all. Yeah, again, I tell the story. I'm the same age as Trump, 78. When I was a young, I wrote it in my Zizzy book, which, by the way, of everything I've written, is my favorite, what Zizzy gave Honey Boy. Zizzy,
yeah, I found the trailer online, Gerald, and I played that on Monday. And I played a little bit of an interview with a guy who did the movie. He was at a film festival, and he was talking about when he talked to you and how you were reluctant to have him do it. It was very interesting.
And anyway, I write about how I grew up in the Bronx. Born in the Bronx. If you're not from the Bronx, man, save it. It's a different trip. And I'm born right after the war. Their energy is at the height. America's at the top. They couldn't control me. They used to tell me, they used to tie me to the crib with nylon stockings because I'm out the window, you know. They'd have my mother and father arrested now for doing that. Anyway, I ran away from kindergarten across the Boston Post Road in the Bronx at 4.5 years old. I hated every day of school. They used to threaten me and my brothers. We had enough of your crap, you go into military school. That was the threat we used to get. I write about in the book how they took us to Botanical Gardens, which we thought was the military school. They had these big things. And they, okay, get out of the car. You go, well, we'll be good, we'll be good. Trump was so arrogant, they sent him to military school. Now, imagine being a teenager, a young kid. I mean, I'm talking about girls, cars, sports, you know. My mother, wow. Everybody loved Aunt Marie's. She was the best cook of everybody. I'm going to eat this crappy food at military school, get dressed up in military drag. Time to get up, time to go to bed, do this, do that. I'm not going to, all right, I'll be good, I'll be good. Trump was so out of his mind, so narcissistic, they sent him to military school. It's about 30 minutes south of me over here in, what the hell's the name of the place? Not Gardner. Cornwall, New York. In the middle, we're talking the 1960s, right?
Yeah.
The middle of nowhere. That's how arrogant and narcissistic he
was. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You talked about how they're going to make sure that you always mention how the bigs are going to get their special treatment. Well, yep. You know, Trump pulled back and he said, well, I want you guys to soak the rich. Now, you know, that's not going to happen, but that was the one time that we saw Sean Hannity come out and really got his hackles up. He says, it seems to go against everything that Donald Trump has ever believed in. It's pretty unbelievable to me, to be honest. Finally complaining about taxes. Why? Because it's kind of, you know, we always hear this NIMBY stuff, you know, not in my backyard. Well, you know, for Sean Hannity, it was like, not in my back pocket.
Yeah,
I don't want to have to pay that stuff. And out of the woodwork, you got all these Republicans out there saying, don't raise taxes, don't raise taxes. When for the last couple of weeks, they've been telling us, no, raise taxes. It's good for us. It'll help you to grow. You know, we got Benny Johnson saying, well, you know, you may be losing money in the stock market because of Trump's volatility and indecision and all the rest of the stuff. But hey, it's a growing experience. It's going to build character to lose your money in the stock market. It's like, give me a break. These people will cheer anything, won't they?
Again, Sean Hannity. Look at that little. Look at that. How could you be so dumb to swallow crap coming out of that clown's mouth?
Yeah.
And what? Look at the money that he's worth.
Oh, yeah.
Look what they pay these.
That's right.
And again, you were talking about that guy when you were on InfoWars and, you know, what the TSA did to them.
Yeah.
It's like that from your city local government all the way up to the top. The power that these people in bureaucrats have taken, the laws, the restrictions they put on you.
Yeah.
It is disgusting.
I talked this week about a case in Hawaii, and I think it was on Reason. And this guy, you know, bought a house from the, and he had a permit for it. They were in the middle of doing a remodeling. And the bureaucrats, they're the local bureaucrats, put out they changed their accounting system, their tracking system. They computerized it. And they said, well, you're going to have, you know, a certain amount of time, like a month or two to re-up your permits. And if you don't, they're going to expire. Well, he didn't know that. And so they started giving him grief. And, he said, well, wait a minute. I had this and we checked this all before I bought the house. And so then finally they come back and go, oh no, you didn't get the final inspection when this house was built 47 years ago. It's like, what are you talking about? And so they put him through all this grief. They're going to tear down his house and everything. He wins in court after a long fight. They're still coming after him because these people are going to continue to come after him. They're going to find one thing or the other after him. They're never going to leave him alone, especially because he beat them in court. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
It's not only at the federal government.
Yeah.
This country's gone down to crap.
Yeah.
It's finished. It's done. Look at the people, the way they dress. As I said, The Ringling, remember when we were young guys, they had the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus? They went out of business. You don't have to step right up. Step right up. See the fat man. See the tattooed lady. See the lady with the beard. You don't have to step right up. They're out in the street all over the place.
I got to tell you, Gerald, when I was in college, I was in bands, right? Played bands. And we had a New Year's Eve gig with a retired circus freaks home in Sarasota. Okay? Some of the strangest things ever. We played their New Year's Eve party. And I'll never forget that. They wanted waltzes from us. We were not a waltz band, but we put together trombone play. I was playing keyboards, and so we put together the Blue Danube Waltz, and that was when we got everybody to dance. It was really, that was so strange. You talk about circus freaks. I can't stop but think about Ringling Brothers there in Sarasota.
I mean, it's so
now
sad.
It's everywhere, yeah.
The way the people dress.
Yeah.
I mean, grown men wearing baseball caps. Grow the hell up. What do you look like a joke? Oh, and the chicks look so hot with their baseball caps, with the hat, with the hair coming out the back. Yeah, the women, I have pictures of my aunts, and how gorgeous they dress. How dignified the people were.
Oh, yeah.
The whole country's gone down.
Yeah.
It's the end of it. Without a renaissance, to me, it's all over. Facts don't mean anything. The Renaissance followed the Black Plague. People were killing themselves with the filthy sanitation. But you can't do it without the dough. The Medici's made it happen. Yeah. We need a Renaissance. We have to... Again, you're a musician. Look what the geeks did to music.
Oh, yeah. I know. Yeah.
And look what the geeks look like. You want to look like a sucker boy? No, I want to look like a peach eye. How about a cook? Look at these dead, in-your-face, arrogant pieces of crap. The geeks, as I said, they got it wrong in the King James Bible. They say the meek shall inherit the earth. The geeks have inherited the earth.
Yeah, yeah.
They brought down the level of this country to the low level of who they are. Hey, is it... artificial intelligence so much better than natural intelligence? Why do you need artificial flavors, artificial colors, artificial intelligence? All right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's about surveillance and control, I think, is really what that's ultimately about. Of course, there's going to be a lot of money in that. I was talking earlier about how we've got Wall Street Journal, as well as it was Forbes that started it. They looked at the claims that are being made by the guy that runs Figure Robots, and they were basically a lot of BS. We have so much hype in all this stuff, and you talked about a dot-com 2.0, and a lot of this stuff has been hyped to the extreme. He was saying that he had robots in the BMW automobile factory in South Carolina that were working throughout the process, and it turns out that he's only got two or three that they're using to sort a couple of different packages that are there, that's all that they're doing. And so he was about to get an amount of money that would give him more capital than Ford Motor Company. And so it's a tremendous amount of hype that they put, expectations that they put. And a lot of this stuff, like, some of these EV companies, was based on hype and even fraud in terms of where they were going. What do you think is going to happen to the stock market now? We've had a lot of uncertainty because of this tariff thing. We've also got issues with the tech companies being overbought, as you talked about, dot-com bust 2.0 with artificial intelligence. What do you see happening with the economy and with gold? Has gold maxed out, or is it going to keep running as long as there is this kind of uncertainty and chaos?
It's going to keep running as long as there's this uncertainty and chaos. And before I was talking about nuclear annihilation, when Trump started talking about having a negotiation with Iran, we wrote in the Trends Journal, this is a fraud. They have absolutely no intention of making peace with Iran. I began the conversation about talking about Iran, how they taught us to hate it all our lives.
Yeah.
And everybody get this in your head. These are the Persians. The very advanced people, and particularly scientifically, technologically, and militarily. These are not dumb people. They've been around a long time. very advanced in a lot of ways. This is a country of 91 million people. 91 million versus 7 million Jewish people in Israel, who's going to win?
Mm-hmm.
They'll flatten, blow out Israel to nothing in a blink of an eye. Now Trump is making this deal with this guy Witkoff. Witkoff, whatever, you know.
A real estate guy. Of course you would make him your ambassador. Because it's all about real estate, isn't it?
And again, another Zionist
mm-hmm.
doing the deal. And then he comes out and says, well, we're not going to pressure Iran to get rid of all their nuclear production. And then he did a 180 like that. Why isn't Iran allowed to have nuclear power plants
mm-hmm.
or nuclear development?
That's right. That's right.
But Israel's allowed to have nuclear bombs.
That's right.
I forgot they're the chosen people. Well, how stupid of me.
Gart Goldsmith said, yeah, they're intentionally muddying the water, blurring the lines by just talking about nuclear sites. And everybody go, oh, well, it's nuclear bomb sites. It's nuclear energy sites. I guess they're not allowed to do that. We're going to change everything over to nuclear energy, and it's going to be run by our technocrats over here, but they're not allowed to have nuclear energy there, right?
No. Yeah. Then going back to Trump, he's the one that killed the deal when there was the nuclear agreement that was signed under Obama. And they had the nuclear inspectors going to the Iranian plants continually, showing that they were not making nuclear bombs. And Trump killed that deal, what, back in 2018?
Mm-hmm.
Trump is totally pro-Zionist. Oh, so is Joe Biden. He called himself a Zionist. And Zionism has nothing to do with religion. It's a political movement.
Right, right. Yeah, there's anti-Zionist Jews, just like there's a lot of anti-Zionist Christians. And I was talking about that earlier as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the rabbis hate, a lot of rabbis can't stand the Zionists. It's a made up thing.
Yeah.
What's that guy, was it Theodore Herzl?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1890s.
Yeah.
A guy from like Austria or Hungary or somebody made up this whole thing. Invented. And then the Rothschilds and all the other ones supported it. Gave them all the money. As I said, you can't do anything without money.
Yeah.
Look at AIPAC. Runs the country.
Yeah.
When it comes to elections, look at the money they give.
That's right.
And now that deadhead Stefanik, whatever her name is, she's going to be running for governor of New York. Oh, great. We got one more run. She put another one. It's a freak show.
Yeah.
Look at the freaks running the show. It's in front of everybody's eyes.
Yeah.
As I said, the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus went out of business because you don't have to step right up and see the freaks. Oh, you like little Mikey Johnson? Look at that little nothing of a clown boy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So going back to Iran, Israel's going to ramp up this war. They just came out with this BS line that Trump stopped Netanyahu from bombing Iran. Did you see that a couple of days ago?
Yeah, I saw that. Are you buying that line?
No, it's total baloney.
They tell him what to do. They just tell them what to do.
Total baloney. But even though to say that they're thinking of bombing Iran,
mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, that's why gold prices are going up like this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And don't forget, hey, you elect me, I'm going to end that Ukraine war in 24 hours after I get into office. Okay?
Yeah. He stopped talking about that, hasn't he? 24
hours.
How
can you get away with this crap?
Yeah.
I make a mistake, yeah, call something wrong. Oh my God, Salenti called it wrong. Hey, I'm a human being. I can't get everything right all the time.
Right. Right.
But now look at my track record. But I'm not lying to you in front of your eyes.
Yeah, that's right.
And I want you to remember this. Now that I'm elected, that Ukraine war is going to end before I get into office.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A fat mouth. What's going on?
Yeah, that's right.
So here's the deal. Europe, writing about it in the trends journals, pumping more and more money into the Ukraine war. Heil Hitler's back in Germany with this guy Merz. building up the military and in warning his government, a former BlackRock guy.
Hmm. Oh, really?
BlackRock.
Yeah.
We got to watch those Russians. They're going to try to invade Europe. Mm-hmm. They're selling the domino theory that they sold during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
And that if we don't stop those Russians, this is coming out of the mouth of the Germans. They're building their defense budget, what, $1 trillion? Oh, we're going to put money into infrastructure, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. You're in recession for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
You're going into your third year recession, third largest economy in the world and the largest in Europe. And now you're going into $1 trillion worth of debt to build up your defense. That's right. We got to stop them Russians.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You killed over 25 million in World War II, Operation Barbarossa. And you're talking about you have to stop the Russians?
Yep.
World War III has begun. There's going to be a false flag event or something that makes it official. This is why gold prices are going up. That plus, look at two of our top trends. Again, I'm at this 45 years. Never did we come out with a top trend wild card.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the Trump card.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like this in my lifetime.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Totally unpredictable. What he's going to do from 1 hour to the next. You know, you look at this tariff stuff. I was just talking about that. Changing his position, you know, within 24 hours. We've got two different takes on this stuff. But, you know, when you go back and you look at the rearmament of Europe, it seems to me like this is, you know, I think these guys are selected. I think they intentionally put Trump in and then took him out and put Biden in and then put him back in again. And I think he's there as an agent of chaos. And I think he's there to push into this World War. He was a hero to a lot of people who were saying, well, look, he's complaining about Europe not carrying their weight in NATO. And so we might just get out of NATO. Well, he had no intention of getting out of NATO. I think what he was just doing was to tell them that they got to spend more money. And that's a constant recurring theme now in his second term. You got to rearm. And as we look at Volkswagen and these other car companies that can't compete with China on EVs, and they can't economically really manufacture anything because they've put restrictions on their energy usage. Now they're moving into, you know, Volkswagen and these other companies are now moving into making military equipment. So it is a huge rearmament and it's a huge repositioning. This is something that's been sold by Trump all the way through.
Again, think of the stupidity of this. You're building bombs, rockets, planes, ships, whatever. This is World War III. Grow up. Why don't you use bow and arrows, all right?
Yeah.
This is going to be, it's going to be new millennium warfare. All this crap you're doing is totally worthless junk. It's going to be nuclear annihilation in a blink of an eye.
Yeah. But meanwhile, they're putting in $1 trillion in the defense budget for the first time. And you don't see any of, you don't see Elon Musk, who is a military industrial contractor himself. You don't see him looking at the Pentagon spending for efficiency or waste at all, do you?
No.
Yeah.
And look at the little clown boy that's our Secretary of Defense. A little arrogant nothing of a jerk. One after another. One after another. Could you get dumber, stupider, loser than Marco Rubio?
That's right.
A little nothing of a boy.
Yeah.
It's a freak show. Step right up, step right up. In a country near you, I little Katsun Macron over there. A little nothing of a boy, if he is at all.
Yeah.
Starmer over there in the UK, and who was before him? The best cartoonist in the world could not have come up with a freakier looking clown figure than Boris Johnson.
He really leaned into that cartoon look, didn't he? I always called him Bojo, you know, Boris Johnson.
Yeah, look at
Bojo the clown.
Again, it's one jerk after another running a country near you.
Yeah, I agree. What about what is happening in the last 24 hours? We had Powell come out and say that he's going to, you know, he's not going to pay any attention to Trump. He got a lot of applause when he said that. He said that as he was speaking to the group, he says, I'm not going to bow to any political pressure from Trump. Got a lot of applause. Well, that set Trump off. And he said, he's playing politics. And if I tell him to leave, he's going to leave. You know, what do you think is going to happen? And what's the impact? You know, Trump, certainly with all of the uncertainty, is wrecking the markets. And we've talked about whether or not, you know, what the Federal Reserve is going to do, because they can wreck things or, you know, create inflation with their quantitative easing or interest rates or whatever. So what do you think is going to play out with this competition between Powell and Trump? What do you think they're going to, what do you think the Fed's going to do?
I've been writing about it in the Trends Journal now since Trump got, before Trump got elected.
Mm-hmm.
We said that he's going to do everything he can to lower interest rates and juice up the economy if there's any kind of danger of it going down or the market's going down. And we said he's done it before and he'll do it again. Let's go back to December 2018. The Dow had its worst December since the Great Depression, 1931. What did Trump do? He pushed Powell to lower interest rates, which Powell did in January 2019. And it juiced the markets. Oh, remember the repo crisis? Oh, forget about that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Powell is nothing more than a little nothing of a boy. As George Collins said, it's one big club and you ain't in it. Who was the Fed head that became the Treasury Secretary?
Yellen.
Janet Yellen. Yeah. Remember her?
Yeah. Yeah. Did mushrooms in China and couldn't stop bowing. Yeah.
Yeah, as we say, Miss Faccia Brute. A clown that was the Fed head becomes the Treasury Secretary. All right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same club. Powell will do what he's told to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's a gutless little nothing of a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump will lower interest rates for another reason. In selling his tariff deal, they want to devalue the dollar so that American products are cheaper to buy. Mm-hmm. Just like China did. We said China was going to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And before you talked about Volkswagen and these other companies whose car sales are going way down. This is the Volkswagen, the BMWs, the Chevrolet, and the Fords, the General Motors that had great, great years in China when Bill Clinton brought China into the World Trade Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And all these Western companies wanted cheap labor. They went over to China and gave China all the high tech and heavy industry technology they never had. And now, 25 years later, they got it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you got to put this stuff into perspective as trend forecasters. You make connections between different fields. All things are connected, like the blood which unites us all, said Chief Seattle, but I think he was wrong with that because we're not connected at all. But anyway, go back to 2000. 10% of Chinese 18-year-olds went to college. Now, nearly 70%. This is a country of 1.4 billion people. They're very smart. America's dumbing down in front of your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
We got 347 million, 345 million. 345 million against 1.4 billion that are very advanced technologically, high-tech and heavy industry.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to AI. All there's going to be a dot-com bust because of all the overinvestment in the first AI companies that came out. Trends are born, they grow, they mature, reach old age, and die. The AI trend was only born in 2022. And everybody invested in these IPOs and these IPO wannabes and the new tech. Oh, no, we don't need these big chips. No, it doesn't cost us $100 million. It only costs us $6 million to do what you did with the chat. We could outdo you.
Yeah.
This is just the beginning. They're going to outdo. Germany was at the height of engineering and advancement for decades. No more, because of the bureaucracy. I can't stand going back to Italy because of the bureaucracy. It's one of the worst in the world. I got friends that live there. They complain all the time. The bureaucracy is going back to what you said about that guy that got the TSA, what they did to him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's going on all throughout the Western world.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you, you know, when we go back to interest rates and Powell and all the rest of the stuff, and as you point out, we know that Trump wants to get the interest rates lowered, helps him with the interest on the debt, which is getting very significant. And yet, when you look at people's trust in the dollar, when we saw him reverse very quickly as the stock market was crashing for 2 days in a row, that first day when it was crashing, he came out and essentially alluded to the fact that it was bonds. Other people said that it was Japan that was dumping the bonds. If he lowers interest rates, if he devalues the dollar, that makes it harder for him to sell bonds. So what's the follow-up with that? I've suggested that perhaps this whole stablecoin stuff, there's an opportunity for them to get the stablecoin to buy their bonds when other countries don't want to buy it and other investors don't want to buy it. And then if they can move it over to that, that also gives them all the functionality of CBDC or digital currency. What do you think about that?
I think you're 100% right. And by the way, I won't go back to that, but also the deeper the dollar fall, again, you go back to your Trends Journal, the death of the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
We've been saying this is going to happen. The world has had enough of America's economic and geopolitical hegemony.
Yeah.
They had it. Going back, the lower the dollar goes, the higher gold prices spike. Gold is dollar-based. So now it becomes cheaper for other countries to buy gold because their currencies have gone up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So going back to what you said about CBD, absolutely. They'll invent one. The Trump team will capitalize on it. And we're doing away with the dollar. We're coming out with a new currency, a digital currency. We'll know every penny you spent, what you spent it on. We get all our tax money from you. Mm-hmm. And my family's very heavily invested in this coin, that thing. And we're going to make more billions of dollars.
Yeah, I agree.
They're going to definitely go CBDC. There's no question the world is going to go into it. China's already there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and Europe is not even making any bones about it. They're still calling it a CBDC. I think what will happen here is that Trump will have to do it stealth. You know, people around Trump will do it stealthily. They'll also do it in a way in which they make money, I think, as
That's
well.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Personally,
well, look,
they make
again,
money. Yeah.
Don't you think that his family knew when he said what he was going to do and his friends to pump the market up before the market skyrocketed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
His friends or anybody knew, hey, listen, you might want to buy the market tomorrow because
he even said that. He even said that. Now's a good time to buy. You know, and you know, I said, okay, even if that wasn't knowing Trump, I think that was a signal to sell. But even, you know, if he wasn't intentionally trying to send a signal to people, when he takes all of this power to himself, to be able to put the tariffs on, take the tariffs off, set the rates arbitrarily, this and that, that leaves him open, even if he was trying to honestly do that. Accruing all that power to himself puts him in that position where, of course, they're going to investigate him. His political enemies are going to investigate him for rigging the markets. It's just a given with him taking all of that power.
He'll do whatever he wants. And again, you get the reality is, we're talking, this guy's been there for only 3 months.
It's going to be a long time, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. My God. Are you kidding? And he again, this guy's power hungry as could be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so this is, I'm telling you, that's why I would not have thought gold prices would have spiked the way they have.
But when you look at it, if he's able to lower the rates, you know, putting pressure on Powell, and Powell wants to, you know, not fight him, or if they devalue the dollar or whatever, all of that stuff is going to help gold, every bit of it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's going to really shoot it through the roof. Yeah, I've got a lot of people who have been saying they think this is gold is getting ready to go hyperbolic.
Yeah, I don't know. It may well. Yeah. It may well, and you could easily see $3,500 an ounce gold, and again...
Oh, it's not that far now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Remember the BS line? We're going to go into Fort Knox?
Yeah, they stopped talking about that, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't draw any more attention to gold, I guess.
They know what's in there.
Yeah, right. And we wouldn't know anyway if they went in there. I mean, it'd be like Al Capone's vault, right? If they walked in and there was nothing there, they'd come up with an explanation. If they walk in and we see some gold stuff, we don't know if it was painted or not. I mean, gold, there was a picture I saw, Gerald, of how Trump has changed the Oval Office, you know, where he has all these press conferences and everything. And he's got his gold guy that makes everything gold in Mar-a-Lago. King Midas came in, and so you got... He's painting everything with gold leaf all through the Oval Office and everything. I mean, he loves gold. He talks about we're going to have a golden age. Well, I guess maybe that was the tip that you should buy gold. I don't know. But he loves gold everywhere, doesn't he? Except we see it in Fort Knox. We wouldn't know if that was his gold guy that just went in there and painted some bricks. How would we know the difference with it, right?
You know, before we went on the air, you said, hey, how you doing? I said, I'm doing all right. I have to tell you, you know, the magazine comes out every Tuesday. This past Tuesday, I was so depressed. I got to write about this and read about this stuff every day.
Yeah.
The massacre going on in Sudan, in Gaza, the death of people, the slaughter of people, starvation of people. You mentioned that clown Katz. The defense guy in Israel.
Yeah.
What do you say? He's going to cut off all humanitarian aid?
That's right. Yeah.
Could you imagine? Let's reverse this. Let's suppose his name wasn't Katz and we'll make up some Arab name for him.
Muhammad.
These were Jewish people in Gaza.
Yeah.
Suppose these were Jewish people in Gaza that were being... And they're not Palestinians. The outrage that would be there, they would call this Holocaust 2.0.
Yeah.
But they're only Palestinians. Their lives don't matter.
Yeah.
Well, I'm heartbroken. Yeah. I am so heartbroken to see this. And again, I launched Occupy Peace well over a decade ago. We're going into a Good Friday. Yeah, where are all these religions that believe in the Prince of Peace?
Yeah, well, Zionism is really taking over Christianity here in America. It truly is. And it's not Christian at all.
No.
And I talked about that the first part of the program. And, you know, when I look at this, I absolutely feel the same way you do. I have people say to me, you know, the news is just too dark and too depressing and everything. And it is depressing even more so when you and I look into it all the time. And as much of it as we see, it's even more depressing than what I cover on the show here. And yet the only thing that I have a hope that is outside of this life. And that's the key thing for me. And, you know, I really couldn't do this if I didn't have the hope of Christ. And I know that the stuff that is happening now, it has, you know, we're in a period of time where there's a battle that's going on. And I just see it as being a part of that battle. And, you know, I know what is going to happen after I die. I know this life is very short. But I'm absolutely confident. You know, that's what hope is. It's that word is confident expectation. That's what I have, confident expectation of what's going to happen. I just know that I'm in the fight. I look at the disease and the suffering in this fallen world, and I know that it's not in my power to change it. But that there is a purpose ultimately that is going to be made out of this in this time of struggle. And we're just here to try to show people what is happening. We don't know if we're talking to people who have ears to hear and eyes to see or not. But we just had, we're called to just tell people what we see. That's what, you know, you're trying to do with this, I think. And it certainly is what I'm trying to do.
Well, you see, I believe that we can change it. I mean, was Trump better than you or me?
Yeah, I think we need to warn people, you know, whether we can, yeah, whether we can change it or not, we need to warn people about it, yeah.
Yeah, but again, you know, like, this is the other thing. I'm hearing from people, they say, I'm so depressed with this, I'm tuning out. Oh, great. Tune out. Yeah, great. Let Hitler take over.
Yeah.
Don't do anything. Don't do a damn thing. You can't do anything. That's who you believe? Fine. Everybody else could do anything. Oh, we talked about the Zuckerbergs, the Musks, the Peach Eyes, Cook. Oh, they could do things. You can't.
Yeah.
You're powerless. Everybody out there, you're powerless. That's what they put into the people's heads.
Yeah.
Because they use these words. Celebrities. What celebrities? What the hell are you talking to? Celebrities. Oh, officials.
Yeah.
Dignitaries.
Yeah.
That's bullshit crap words. Excuse the language. BS crap words about putting people at a higher level than anybody else. And that we're supposed to follow them. We're still in kindergarten.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Again, I've talked to people who went into the pharmacist, and I've told the story on air. My son, who was injured with antibiotics, and we were talking to the people there at the pharmacy because they were asking us why we're buying some of the stuff that we're buying. And she said, "Oh, wow." I said, "Yeah, it's on the warning label, but they don't give you the black box warning label." But she said, "Oh, that stuff on the label, this is the person at the pharmacy. The labels are so scary, I just don't read them anymore." And I thought, wow, you know, that's the way people are with news as well. The news is so scary, I just don't want to know. I want everything to be nice and happy, and I want to pretend that this stuff doesn't exist. Well, you can pretend that it doesn't exist, but that's not going to make it go away. It's only going to get worse, isn't it?
Again, yeah. It's Easter time, and I consider myself a warrior for the Prince of Peace. And when I say warrior, I mean it, because this is one of the covers of the Trends Journal back in 2011.
Yeah, yeah.
The Prince of Peace made a whip to drive the money changers out of the temple.
Yeah. That's right.
Right?
Right. Right.
The same money changers that are running the world today. That's so right. As I said, where are all the religions that believe in Christ, and how come they're not out there saying, stop this slaughter of human beings?
Well, I agree.
Bring peace on earth.
I mean, it's because they're being run by people like Paula White and Hagee and these, you know, these big name preachers out there who are friends of Trump.
I have friends that go to the Catholic Church over here that were totally pro-Ukrainian war.
Yeah, 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 yeah. For many of the people who are pushing this stuff, it's the love of money. Yeah, that's pushing it. I said, for many of the people who are pushing this, it's their love of money, right? They want to be a part of the system, just like you're talking about. They want to be a part of the club. They can make a lot of money if they are pushing Ukraine war. They're pushing the Israel war. And so they push it to their people, and other people are being led by them, you know, and they're being led by people who are at the root of all evil. Money's not evil. It's the love of the money. And that's what's turning these people, I think.
Well, again, you look at the people listening to your show and mine. There are enough people that have had enough of this. And if we united under a banner, a real peace banner of reality, we could change this. The people, look, if Trump wasn't there, let's pretend he's not there. Nobody would want to vote for the Republicans. There's nobody there that's a standout.
Right.
And again, they're pumping up this Cortez and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic Party. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you kidding? Look at the little jerk show over here. There are a load of people that are ready for a new way.
I agree.
And that's what I'm fighting for. I'm fighting for peace and a new way to bring back the true American spirit that I grew up with that made me the man that I am. Mm-hmm. And the family I'm blessed to come from that really gave it to me. And that's how I grew up. You be who you want to be. Don't you tell me who to be. Tell me what to do.
I agree.
That's the life that I live. Matter of fact, my father, may rest in peace, I get in a fight with him. He'd say to me, a little SOB, you think I'm telling you what I'm telling you because I want you to be like me? I want you to become yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's right. Well, again, it's always great to have you on, Gerald. And if you use the code NIGHT, folks, you can get Trends Journal 10% off. And it is filled with a wealth of information. It's truly amazing, as you pointed out, Gerald, that Wall Street Journal doesn't even talk about what's going on with gold. How could they miss that? I guess, they can hype the vaccines, but they don't want to tell you about gold. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you, everybody. Have a great weekend. Common Man. They created Common Core to dumb down our children. They created Common Pass to track and control us. Their Commons Project to make sure the commoners own nothing. And the communist future. They see the common man as simple, unsophisticated, ordinary. But each of us has worth and dignity created in the image of God. That is what we have in common. That is what they want to take away. Their most powerful weapons are isolation, deception, intimidation. They desire to know everything about us while they hide everything from us. It's time to turn that around and expose what they want to hide. Please share the information and links you'll find at thedavidknightshow.com. Thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing. If you can't support us financially, please keep us in your prayers. TheDavidKnightShow.com.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle, while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP, an elite CompTIA certification partner.
VA education benefits are available to those who qualify.